resolution in the folder.
They're pulling out all the stuff. They got a guy dressed up as a pirate.
Oh, underneath the pile?
36, yeah, 2 years.
Oh,
dressed
okay.
up as a pirate. 32 years. They're just trying to pull in all the stops there. That was Marshall Pirates. That's who we were, right?
The House Committee on Education will come to order. Welcome to the House Committee on Education. The bill that we're hearing tonight is House Bill 2834, and I believe that everyone here is aware that what we're talking about are proposed amendments to House Bill 2834 that, if adopted, would result in the closure of the Oregon School for the Blind. We have made an effort to get these amendments available to everyone who is interested. We've been emailing them. We've had several copies brailled, and I believe that there are there large prints.
Dash two.
Mm-hmm.
We can get them down.
Okay, and there and we can get some more large print materials down here as well. There are a large number of people who are signed up to testify tonight, and we want to make sure that everyone has the opportunity to be heard. And in order to do that, first we're going to hear from Representative Klim, and after we hear from Representative Klim, we're going to have a 20-minute presentation from the board of the Oregon School for the Blind. And after that, for our general public testimony, I have an egg timer, and we're going to do 3 minutes per person, and I'm just going to use the egg timer because otherwise I will have a hard time asking you to stop. And this way, we make sure that people that are at the end of the list get a chance to speak while everyone is still here. And the committee has committed to being here this evening, but the 3 minutes will help us be sure that they can drive home safely at the end of the evening. If you have a cell phone with you, if you could please turn it not just to vibrate, but all the way off. It disrupts the recording system when there are messages that are received, and I am aware that there are many people who are listening to this hearing on the Internet, and we want to make sure that the information is clear to everyone that is interested in this issue. And with that, I would invite Representative Klim. Representative, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for accommodating my schedule. I know you've got lots of people, so I will be brief. I just wanted to testify in relationship to House Bill. For the record, I'm Brian Klim, State Representative from here in Salem. I wanted to testify on House Bill 2834. I'm only able to really comment on the Dash 2 amendments because those are the ones I've looked at. I'm not sure how what I say relates to the Dash 3, but perhaps you can figure that out at some point. You know, I think you probably are aware that I'm opposed to the House Bill 2834 and the Dash 2 amendments. And the main reason, and I sat on this committee last session, and I think I could summarize it quickly and pretty easily, which is the first section, this is the Education Committee, and we're considering closing a school. And it's a unique anomaly that is not common in state government for the Education Committee to be talking about closing schools rather than how to help them or open them. And so my basic problem for me, not that I should assign other people's opinions to anyone else, but for me, I believe the school provides a valuable function. And so rather than go much further than that, I have some specific questions about the bill. For example, there's a provision, which is a good one, that says the educational services offered to a student shall be equal to the level, frequency, and type of educational services offered at the school. And I just wonder what the penalty is, or is that a condition of whether this whole project moves forward or not? I've got a question about whether the Trust Fund for the Blind could be raided, or whether, you know, the intention is to have amendments maybe in the Dash 3s that deal with some sort of raid-proof situation for the Trust Fund. I'm certainly opposed, but I don't, if you're going to go down this road, I don't see any other alternative, but I'm highly opposed to Section 5. The Board of Directors of the Oregon School for the Blind is abolished. We just got them created. I was a co-sponsor of that bill. That part I you know, obviously don't care for, though I understand why they would be unnecessary if the school's closed. So I think I'll stop at that point. Generally speaking, I would like to be able to offer you a positive alternative. So what I would suggest to you is the relating clause works. I would adopt new amendments, if it were my choice, that take House Bill 2114, and it would fit in a relating clause. And this would give you an opportunity to help create a positive vision for repairing and rebuilding the school, for having programs that students may offer or may want to take advantage of at a revitalized, rejuvenated school. That involves making sure the school districts make the opportunities at the school known. I've had several constituents say they didn't even know that it existed, and yet they live here in Salem. So I would like to offer my assistance, if you're willing to go down that road, in trying to come up with a plan that would really work for this school to remain viable, remain in operation, and in a kind of proactive way figure out how to take care of it better than it has been over the last couple decades. And thank you for having me back. I won't come again. I followed this whole process, but it was always about co-location. That's the only reason I feel justified in taking more of your time, is this shift in decision was a month or so ago, and this is the first public hearing on specific amendments, and the one was about framework. You listened to me then, and I will not come back and harangue you anymore. But thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you, Representative Clemon. You're always welcome in our committee, so I hope we do see you again. Thank you. And Debbie, are those the Braille copies that just came? So we have the Dash 2 amendments in Braille form, and if you would like to see them or use them, if you raise your hand, someone can get those to you right away. Thank you. So keep your hands up. We have three copies, and I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 hands filled. So we'll do three, and then we'll move them from there. Yes. All right. Thank you. And at this point, I would invite up the Oregon School for the Blind, the board of the Oregon School for the Blind. And so it looks like there's one more Braille copy. It looks like right over here. And are we dialing into Elizabeth right now?
Yeah,
we can dial into. Okay. Do I dial the line first? We're dialing up Elizabeth.
I'm having trouble hearing the speakers. Is your mic off?
We're not talking right now. We're making a phone call, and then we'll start meeting again in a moment.
Yeah, but we can't hear these speakers when they're speaking. I don't think their mics.
They haven't started yet.
Oh, did you have trouble hearing Representative Clem?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
So pull the. So we'll make sure that those are pulled, and are they turned up as loud as they can be, the microphones? Okay, thank you.
Pull them closer.
Thanks. Elizabeth, are you on?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
I can, and Elizabeth, you're here with the House Education Committee, and your colleagues are seated at the dais. Is that better?
Yes.
In terms of the sound? Great. So on the phone, we have Elizabeth Russo-Rooney, and we have the board of the Oregon School for the Blind, and I will turn it over to you with the request that when you first begin making your remarks, if you can identify yourself for the record, that would be very helpful, please.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee, guests. I am B.T. Kimbrough. I'm vice chair of the Oregon School for the Blind Advisory Board. We're minding the store for Elizabeth Russo-Rooney, who's the chair of the board and was unable to be with us in person tonight. Elizabeth, we're so glad that you can be with us by phone. Can you hear us all right?
Yes, I can hear you good.
Well, the phone link should give us the opportunity to allow our chair to be a direct part, and we want to thank the chair of the committee for extending this courtesy. We appreciate it very much. The Oregon School for the Blind Advisory Board was created by the 2007 Oregon Legislature to provide a five-year master plan for the school. As we have worked to meet this mandate, we've become intensely aware of the keen interest in the development of a plan for a coordinated continuum of services for blind and visually impaired students in Oregon. We worked hard on that plan. The first edition of the plan was submitted early this year. It was warmly welcomed by the Superintendent of Public Instruction and members of the State Board of Education. We were somewhat stunned then to learn that this committee was considering a proposal not only to close the school and to abolish the board, but also considering creating a replacement system without a visible collaborative planning function. When we talk about planning, it can easily seem like an impersonal thing. When we talk about the continuum of services, that can often seem like an impersonal, distant thing. I want to give it a little bit of identity for a moment, if I might. I was contacted recently by a parent whose name is Cheryl, whose son is at the School for the Blind now for a short-term assessment. She called me not so much because she's concerned that the closure of the school will end the assessment, because the assessment is only for 10 days. Stay with me. It's fairly complex what her concerns are.
You're too far from the mic. We can't hear you in the audience.
All right. Is that better, or is this mic not on?
I don't think it's on.
In that case, I guess it doesn't matter how far I am from
it. There's another. If you right to your left, there's another one. Is that one working better?
Let's see. Is that better? I think
Working from back here.
All right, we're getting some technical assistance to see if we can get these all keyed up so we can all hear.
All right, thank you.
Well, will you wait for just a moment while we figure this out so everyone can hear?
I will wait.
Thank you.
Is that
right?
How are you?
I guess they are on because they're registering with the recording.
We have tech support.
I wouldn't call it that.
We can hear you okay, Representative Gelson, but for some reason, everybody else is not coming out to the PA and they can't hear you.
All right, we're working. So I think we're on the phone right now to find someone that can address the speaker issue.
And they're in the back.
You know what, we're going to stand at ease for a moment. So we're going to turn the recording off and let them, so everybody can just relax for a minute.
All right, and you're going to stop the clock.
We're stopping the clock. Yeah. Are we on? Okay. So we're back in order. When you come up to speak, it seems like we're having trouble with projection from the microphones. So if you can speak really loudly into the microphone, we want to make sure everybody can hear. I wish my microphone wasn't so loud.
Shall we resume?
You may resume. Thank you for your patience.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. We were talking about a way... Can I be heard? Can you hear me now?
Yes.
All right. We were trying to make the plan for the continuum of services into the human interaction that it truly is. And I was telling you about my conversation with Cheryl, who's a parent of a student, 14 and a half years old, at the Oregon School for the Blind. He just started yesterday. He's involved in a short-term assessment. His mom is concerned, and she was talking to me because she heard I was on the board, not so much because of the possible closure of OSB, because his assessment will only last for 10 days. Now, her concern was much deeper than that. Adam has been getting some of his services at the local district level, and his mom is very eager that when he goes back home, that he continue to be able to stay in the community. She's aware, she's heard rumors, that the system might be undergoing some change and that it might be much more likely that he'd have to get his services at the ESD level, away from the community. Not sure what to tell her, so I urged her to come and talk to the committee. Her concerns and Adam's are just one small component in the system that we're talking about. When we say a plan for the continuum of services, people have questions. They don't always know where to get the answers. Cheryl has been so concerned to try to keep her son getting educational services close to home that she spent thousands of dollars appealing, because there has been a tendency on the part of the respondents, the people who perform the services, to want to give it to him far from home. She's spent a good deal of money trying to change that. And now she wonders, is the system going to fail her? Is it going to change again? So you'll hear from her later. I just wanted to mention her to you because when we talk about a plan for the continuum of services, we're talking about Cheryl and we're talking about Adam, her son. We have a lot of common ground with this committee, the OSB board. The board and the committee have both made it clear in doing their work that they want to put students first, and they want to put the stakeholders first. And it's not about property. That's true of the board that I serve on. It's also true of this committee. I've heard members say it a number of times. We've all spent a lot of hours trying to plan a systematic way to enhance educational services for blind and visual impaired students without losing more ground than we gain. We've looked at a lot of the same factors over this time, and we have that in common too. We've reached different conclusions. I want to focus a minute on the factors and the conclusions. We've all seen pretty much the same factors that make us believe there needs to be a change in the status quo. For instance, what I was talking about a minute ago, the chaotic, some people might at least say chaotic, service environment in this state for blind and visually impaired students, the deteriorating conditions concerning some of the buildings on the campus, the need to invest more money in earthquake safety, the challenges associated with the massive budget shortfall in the state, a national shortage of qualified teachers for the visually impaired, challenges to local school districts to meet the needs of their blind and visually impaired students with the funds they have available. While seeing these same circumstances, the OSB board and this committee have reached different conclusions. This committee appears to be making a proposal which would replace OSB with the financial support to enhance educational services in the home districts of the displaced students. The OSB board has proposed in its 2009 master plan that the OSB become a statewide resource for enhancing services available to blind and visually impaired students all over Oregon. Now, we both face unanswered questions with respect to our proposals, and the questions all point to money. The OSB board's plans call for extensive collaboration among the many stakeholders all over the state. How would this be financed? As recommendations for a better coordination and improvement of services come through, how will that be funded? If the school is to continue as a viable service provider, its facilities will have to be maintained and improved. How will that be funded? Clearly, if blind and visually impaired students in Oregon are going to benefit from long and short-term services in Oregon in the future, some way is going to have to be found to make those commitments and meet them. Now, with respect to the committee's plan, the amendments to 2834, similar questions apply. $6 million are suggested for the first 2 years. Will the full legislature approve that? Will budget cuts of up to 30% apply to this? In 2 years or 4 years or 6 years, will future legislatures continue to appropriate those dollars? Or will they say, crisis passed, let's put that money somewhere else? Indeed, this would appear to be a great danger with respect to the amendments of 2834 because it has no plan for identifying the students who would have left their home districts and would have enrolled in OSB in the years that follow. You've got a plan for serving the 31 students who are there now. But bear in mind, every year, new students come to OSB. As students graduate, as students leave school, new students come to the school. This plan has no way that we have seen to identify who those students would be in following years and follow their eligibility. Without that eligibility, you no longer have justification for the appropriation in 4 or 6 years. If this committee is going to recommend the closure of OSB, it has a responsibility to set up a mechanism not just to address the current crisis, but to meet the needs of generations of blind and visually impaired students to come. Madam Chair, I made a promise to you, and the first time I met with you, that even though we opposed this bill, we'd do our best to improve it as much as we could. And that's a promise I take seriously because this really is about the students. Now, even if you improved it in that way, I expect we'd still oppose it. We have a lot of issues with it. But rather than take any more time to talk about those, I want you to hear from other members of the board who will present different perspectives. Margo is a tremendous resource to us. She not only is a parent, but she's a public service, a public servant, and she brings a lot of perspective to our deliberations, and I want her to share her comments with you. Margo?
Thank you, BT. The master plan in front of you. Can everyone hear me okay?
No.
Yeah? Yes.
Bring it really close to you.
Better? Yes. So for the record, my name is Margo Lalich, and I reside in Cannon Beach, Oregon. I am a member of the OSB Advisory Board, as well as a parent of a student who attends OSB and has been for the last 5 years. Representative Gelzer and members of the House Education Committee, thank you for this opportunity to provide additional testimony on behalf of present and future students who may choose to attend the Oregon School for the Blind. As I have shared with ODE and this committee, I am opposed to immediate closure of OSB. You have documents that I have submitted in the recent past, and therefore I will not be redundant. My hope is that you read and carefully consider what I have written. It is clear that a cost analysis of providing the same level of service at OSB within a local school district for the short and long term has not been done. Hence, the proposed formula for funding services is speculative, not assured. Upon reviewing the recently published 30% proposed budget cuts, it is evident that despite the DD Council's support of the bill and frequent reference to the Staley suit, the services that were assured are at risk of being significantly cut. The security of the proposed safety net, also referred to as the legacy fund, is only as good as the policymakers drafting and supporting it at the time of its adoption and the fiscal stability of our state. In discussion with superintendents in my county, where there are 5 school districts, none of them have heard of House Bill 2834. To quote the superintendent of my son's school district, I am not up to speed on the issues related to co-location, but I can tell you that school districts are not prepared for closure. Since House Bill 2834 is so general in its language, I doubt if many school districts or legislators are aware that there is more to the story. There is support of House Bill 2834 from regional programs because they stand to benefit financially from the closure. Anyone who has had any experience with negotiating an IEP knows that it is not as simple as requesting services and receiving them upon request. Local school districts purchase the services at a cost, and they are provided based upon resources available. For rural areas, resources are often scarce, which necessitates a dependency on the latter coming from the metro area. OSB provides what all schools offer all students, the opportunity to fully participate in any facet of the educational experience without barriers or limitations. Is this committee prepared to vote on a bill that will require local school districts to provide the same level of service available at OSB? The student-to-teacher staffing ratio has been repeatedly criticized. Is this committee prepared to duplicate the quality of services for one student when the current support is distributed to many more students in one environment, where barriers are not part of the vocabulary and community is the cultural norm? As I shared with the State Board of Education, one of the many attributes of OSB and its campus is that it provides a sense of place that is unique to students who are blind and visually impaired. By sense of place, I am referring to an environment that fosters collective identity, protects the cultural heritage of a community, as well as promotes cultural awareness. Identifying and appreciating a sense of place is something we expect and accept as critical to a positive educational experience of any student. Can you guarantee that House Bill 2834 will provide this now and into the future for students who will either be transitioning back to their local school districts or would have opted to attend the school had it remained open? As this committee and legislature will be called to make very difficult decisions regarding many complex issues while considering the current fiscal dilemma, I beseech you to call upon your conscience. Can you, without a reasonable doubt, assure students and their families that House Bill 2834 will continue to fulfill its obligations for as long as OSB has served blind, visually impaired students in Oregon? The OSB is the result of a legislative request. We have spent 2 years diligently working to develop a 5-year plan for OSB and fulfilling many of the duties assigned to the proposed task force. In Glasgow, Scotland, there is a school that serves students who are blind, visually impaired, and deaf, hard in hearing. Hazelwood School was specifically designed to serve this population, taking into account a broad spectrum of sensory deficits. I have attached a brief article for you on the story behind this school and its innovative design on a campus similar to the OSB site. My point is that we collectively have an opportunity to be visionary, to actually do something different and better than what currently exists in the spectrum of services. As one public servant to another, you have an obligation to be fiscally prudent with the resources we currently have available. The OSB board has accomplished good work since our inception, and we have submitted a plan that has already begun the implementation phase. I urge you to support us in our work with a mutual understanding that change is needed and expected. Once again, I ask each of you to support us in our mission to create a model educational program that meets the needs of all blind and visually impaired students in Oregon. Thank you.
Margo, thank you very much. Each of our board members brings a unique perspective to the work, and I want you to hear briefly from one of the consumer members of our board. And I want her to share that perspective with you. KSEP.
I'm not sure. Okay. Thank you very much. I don't know if you can. I can't hear myself. So okay. That's is that okay? All right.
Can you hear in the back?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I'll kiss this thing, and we'll see what we can do.
Speak up.
My name is KSEP, and I am an Oregonian. I've lived in Oregon for almost 58 years to 60, And so I feel like I'm among friends because we're all interested in Oregon. I'm an activist in the blind community, a representative of the American Council of the Blind of Oregon, and I have been privileged to serve with my fellow board members from various walks of life and various perspectives, Margo and BT and Elizabeth and Annie and Claude have really broadened my horizons. So tonight, I want to thank you for the opportunity to address you and to share my heart. And I want to focus on two things. First of all, one of the reasons that in the 1907 Oregon legislature established the board on which I serve was to make certain that blind and deaf individuals could fully participate in the process of overseeing and advising both schools on the direction that we need to move in into and provide the best possible education for children who often do not have a loud enough voice in their own affairs. Okay, so what I've am concerned about is two things, and one of them is the fact that OSB has provided an opportunity for students to come in for short-term educational experiences from major districts, and because programs, weekend programs have been slashed, and because other things have been cut due to budget constraints and due to aspects of legislation, these programs have not been able to enrich kids from Eastern Oregon, Southern Oregon, or spots that are even further away than that. So I think that what the board has tried to accomplish is that we want to enrich all blind children's lives. We want to also make certain that every child has an opportunity for education, and we want to work in cooperation and collaboration with the regional programs throughout the state, because without both the Oregon School for the Blind and the regional programs working together, the kids aren't going to get the best that they can get. And that's what this board was meant to do. I'm a student, former student of the School for the Blind, so when I think about, you know, this closing of the school, I think about the fact that we're talking about getting rid of an old house that I lived in for a long time. And I have to admit, emotionally and personally, that's a difficult thing. But, you know, we have to do the best we can, and we're wanting to do that. In closing, I want to be able to share a quotation with you that kind of speaks to my heart. It's by an activist of the blind and for the blind named Helen Keller. Now, I need to find this quote because... and she said that she made some statements that I think we can relate to. And I'm trying to find my notes because
I'm afraid we're getting short on time.
Okay. In closing, I would like to read this this quote. Well, maybe I can't. So, but I'd like to thank you for the opportunity of being able to share. Thanks.
Well, we're all having problems with our technology tonight. we can empathize with that. In closing, I just want to share with you a couple more items. That you received a piece of correspondence from the president of the Council of Schools for the Blind, Dr. Stuart Wittenstein. He's the superintendent of the California School for the Blind. There are more than 40 residential schools in this country, and he wrote to us on behalf of that council with some encouragement and advice. You have the entire letter. I just wanted to touch on a couple of things that he said. He commended the amendments for setting up a resource center, because that's a rare thing. But he of course indicated that they were very disappointed to learn of the possible closure, because he indicated that the stakeholders need more choices, not less. And he concluded the bottom line is the School for the Blind in the 21st century has a lot to offer in the state. And if the Oregon School for the Blind is closed, it's the families and children who will lose rich opportunities for learning and growing. And he ended by offering the expertise of the council to help us strengthen the school in Oregon if we should choose to take them up on it. And that's a matter of record. But there are still a lot of state schools for the blind out there, and Oregonians have a history, I understand, having just moved here 2 years ago, of going our own way. But this is still a model which is considered tremendously useful in a lot of places. Now, very briefly, at the end, I want to finally give an answer to a question that Chair Gelser posed at the very beginning of these hearings, way back in February. And the question was, closure or co-location? Well, there are some other options. There's an option that Representative Klim referred to, and it gave some joy to my heart to hear a mention of House Bill 2114, which would fund the repairs, which would step up and do what needs to be done. If we're going to have these schools in the state, they need to be kept in good repair. They need to be safe for the students. And funding 2114 is the right idea. But there's another alternative that's sitting right in front of our face, and I want to mention it for just 30 seconds. 2834 originally was a bill that called for a task force to look at the challenges and benefits that have come to OSB. We contacted the chair as a board when we saw the bill and said we had some reservations about it because it looked like it was going to mostly look into closure. But we're extremely flexible. If that was slightly modified, we're a planning board. That's what we do. We're here to plan. And the task force that was mandated to look at long-range planning and help look into some short-range ways of improving OSB, we could work with that. Boy, we could work with that in spades. So far as co-location is concerned, we were trying to block co-location because it was going to be disruptive to the school, to the students. It was going to shift the school to another neighborhood, a neighborhood that lacks a lot of the advantages the current neighborhood of the school has. But if you say co-location or closure, of course we could work with the Department of Education, which wants the school to continue just in another place. Is that a deal breaker? No, indeed it is not. So this board stands to work, ready to work with this committee in a lot of constructive ways. We're just very concerned about the speed with which this proposal is moving. The amendments don't have dry ink on them yet, and yet we hear they may be reported out on Friday. And this closure date for the school is September the 1st. That's moving pretty fast, Madam Chair, when you consider how many people have stakes in this and what kind of changes it can mean to their lives. We hope you can slow down. We'd love to work with you in some of these ways. Thank you very much, Madam Chair, for allowing us to appear before you.
Thank you very much for a wonderful presentation. Elizabeth, did you have anything you wanted to add?
I did just have about 2 cents worth.
Okay.
And that is to...
Can you identify yourself for the record?
Over many years, this same issue has come forth in the legislature in terms of the need for change and the high cost of the service provided. And ultimately and consistently, it has been decided that closure isn't the best option. The other piece that I wanted to say is even involved in that, which is a huge issue, and that is trust. Trust of the legislature, trust of the programs being able to provide the necessary tools for the students to be successful. And my input in terms of the caliber of this board that's been established and appointed by the governor, I've worked with many, many boards and never one as absolutely committed, high quality, and motivated by experience in working with and living as blind individuals. An incredible collection of expertise in almost every area relating to blindness, and I believe that we have a very quality master plan that if we are given the time and the ability to collaborate with all the parties, that we have the potential to create wonderful change. And I believe that if the school is closed, that will be a detrimental action that can't be undone. Once it's closed, it's not going to reopen. So as the other members have shared, I would just not repeat what they've said, but underline and emphasize, please slow down and let's look at what we're really talking about, investing in the future, and making the best possible choices for our kids now and in the future to receive the education and the tools and the experience they need to be successful. That's what we're trying to do. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all very much. And so one of the customs that we have in the legislature, it might be a crazy one, is that we don't applaud or boo or any of those things. So to the extent that you can try not to do that, it will help us get through the evening a little bit more quickly. Although I understand there are times when clapping happens, and that's fine too. So next I would call Michael Wright, Sherry Ulmer, and Lori Hinkle. And as I mentioned before, this is the part of the day when I'm starting the timer, and it's 3 minutes. Do I have this turned on so we'll hear it? There. Yes. Okay. Welcome. Thank you for coming. Oh, yes. And Elizabeth, we're going to hang up now, okay?
Okay.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Right, welcome. And the way that this works, if you state your name for the record before you begin your comments, that helps with the transcription.
Not order that you said.
It's up to you.
Oh okay. Well, I'll be first then.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. My name is Sherry Ulmer. I'm the guidance counselor at the Oregon School for the Deaf, and I'm co-president of State Teachers Education Association. Representative Gelzer and members of the House Education Committee, I would like you to take a moment and think back to your school days, elementary, middle, or high school. What was your greatest fear back then? Facing a bully, passing tests, singing a solo in the choir, being liked, and fitting in. It is part of every child's normal development to seek social significance. It fosters self-esteem, which is critical for every person's ability to succeed. Now, please, think about the 31 students currently enrolled at OSB and what could happen if the school closes. When the third grade boy goes back to his homeschool district and is always the last one chosen for the dodgeball teams, or worse, given a different recess activity, will one of you be there to comfort him? What would you say to him? When the high school junior girl sits home alone on prom night, would any one of you be willing to go explain things to her? When well-meaning students choose groups to work with on a class project, can you imagine this conversation? Well, she's really sweet, but we're being graded on our visual aids. Let's pick somebody else. Clap your hands together if you are willing to go and explain to that young blind girl. I would like to share with you a fable. I respectfully apologize to the author, Lauren Isley, for taking liberties with his characters. One day, a great tidal wave washed thousands of starfish onto the shore. They were stranded and needed the seawater to thrive, yet they could not travel quickly on the sand. One young member of the House Education Committee, let's say it's you, was walking along the beach and saw so many starfish in distress. You rightfully show concern for them and start picking up starfish and throwing them back into the water. An old member of the Ways and Means Committee walks up and surveys the scene. He's immediately worried about how much money it will cost to clean up this mess. He asks you what you're doing. You reply, The sun is up and the tide is going out. If I don't throw them in, they'll die. He considers your remark and smirks. You young whippersnapper, there's no way you're going to be able to make a difference to all those starfish. Well, no, sir, you say, as you reach down to pick up a starfish near your feet and toss it toward the ocean. But I just made a difference to that one. Thank you.
Thank you. Good catch.
Hi, I'm Lori Hinkle. I live in Sheridan. My daughter, Liberty, graduated from OSB last year. She spent about 1.5 years in OSB's transition program.
Can't hear you.
Okay, I'll try again. I'm Lori Hinkle. I'm from Sheridan. Can you hear me? Okay. My daughter, Liberty, graduated from OSB last June. She spent 1.5 years in OSB's transition program. Liberty absolutely flourished at OSB. She's a different kid now, confident, able, and determined to do what it takes to be successfully independent. I question this bill's ability to meet some of the most important needs of our blind children. This bill addresses many of the facets in educating the blind. However, a crucial need that seems to be negated and overlooked is time. OSB's program allows for the time that it takes to treat adaptive technology, large print, braille, orientation, and mobility as integral to the student's overall development. The time that it takes to fully facilitate and consistently integrate these tools is just not available in a mainstream setting. OSB does more than provide the schools needed educationally to be successful. It also focuses on education's tandem goal, which is social development. At OSB, the students are not sidelined. They are given a chance to fit in at a very critical juncture in their life and development. The social aspects availed by OSB simply cannot be replicated in a mainstream setting. The chance to mature and develop friendships among peers with like challenges has made an enormous impact on my daughter. I drove my daughter back and forth to OSB for 1.5 years and watched this program in progress. I'm sorry, it's hard because, you know, it's different when you have a special needs kid. Because you want to see them succeed at really pretty much all costs. You know, the staff was amazing. The students are essentially engaged in some form of learning from early morning until bedtime. She was exhausted when I would pick her up on the weekends. I don't see any way that a normal school setting can provide that time that it would take to do that. A very important part of the program is exposing the students to everything in our environment. The primary way that information is transferred to people and in communication now in our society is visual. There's no way to really get around that in a normal school setting. OSB exposes the kids to the information firsthand in a very compact way so that they are not losing information that they need to be educated. Proper understanding the world around them is very important despite their lack of visual context. Because of OSB Liberty...
I have to ask you to summarize because it's beeping.
Okay. Because of OSB, Liberty learned to navigate not only the streets of Salem and the bus system independently, but also learned to navigate the social services that she will need to further her development. And in a way, I'm just asking you to slow down again and please look at this. Thank you.
Thank you. The last time we saw you, Mr. Wright, you were getting ready to go to the grocery store for pasta Alfredo.
Exactly right. And it's a pleasure to see many of you again. I'm Michael Wright. I'm a teacher at the School for the Blind. My master's degree is in working in special education with the visually impaired. And 10 years ago when I completed that degree, I had a chance to be able to do my practicum at the School for the Blind. I was dramatically influenced back then at the University of Northern Colorado by probably one of the leading inclusionists in the entire country, who had me pretty well convinced that you could never give at a residential school the kind of service you could give at a school district. At the end of my practicum, I realized how wrong he was. He had the opinion that every student could be serviced best by one model. And I now realize that there are some students who will have to be helped through a variety of models. And what I continually see in the newspaper is that we keep citing this escalating cost. and that that would be the reason to potentially close the school. I'm very concerned about that because when they talk about the escalating cost, we're talking about comparing 5 years ago a school that had a budget for 50 students to a school that has a budget for 31. And when you do a per student comparison, it makes it look like it's skyrocketed, when in actuality the costs have probably gone down a little bit, especially when you consider inflation. So what we're seeing is that we're not getting the students to the school, and that's the issue that I believe the board was very effectively talking about addressing. There are some students who will always be best served in a residential setting. There are some students who would only be served best in their home school district. I don't believe that by eliminating an option that most states offer, that we could possibly say we're doing what would be the best thing for all students to be able to meet the least restrictive environment. And as a teacher who has taught in an inclusive setting, as a teacher who has been an itinerant teacher trying to go around and serve students 1 hour at a time with a caseload that overworked me and really didn't get them services they needed, I can tell you that many students I work with right now are so much better off here. And what we need to do, I believe, is see if we can get a better conversation with the regional programs to find out if we are not getting some students to the school who'd be better served there. If we did, it'd be a better use of the resources. And then finally, my parents moved to Oregon back in the 40s. We have been, therefore, supporting this school as taxpayers for 60-plus years. I don't understand how we can say that a $4-point-some-million budget today with nearly 4 million residents in Oregon is more of a burden on us than what they were able to provide 130 years ago. There were 100,000 residents in Oregon back then, and somehow they provided for the needs of blind students back then. In fact, if you did a comparison of what $4.5 million today would have been back in 1873, it would be about $250,000 is all. And that means back then they would pay $2.50 per resident to provide a school, and today we're only paying a dollar. I don't see how we are looking at this and saying this is too expensive. I believe we need to reconsider.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Lori, I didn't look down far enough to see Liberty. Did Liberty want to speak too? So Liberty Hinkle and Cheryl Gokin and Terrence Seidel-Hart. And if I call you and you're part of a pair, just tell me and we'll accommodate and make that work. Sorry about that, Liberty. Debbie does. Welcome, Liberty. Would you like to start?
Okay.
All right, and if you can get really close to the microphone so that people in the back can hear, that would help a lot.
Hi, my name's Liberty Hinkle, and I'm from Sheridan. I was a student at OSB in the transition program for 1.5 years, and I would just like to share a few ways that the school has changed my life. The first way was the school, the teachers there provided me with the skills I needed to travel independently as a blind person. I was taught to use a monocular to read the street signs and the names of businesses. The instructors also showed me how to use a digital recorder for recording important information like walking directions to unfamiliar areas and phone numbers. The second major area was the area of adaptive technology. While I was at the School for the Blind, the instructors introduced me to JAWS, and other technologies that I use. I use JAWS on a daily basis for school and internet or communication with other people. The third major area that was a great benefit to me was the apartment program at the School for the Blind. While I was in the apartment program, I did my own cooking, cleaning, shopping. I traveled back and forth to the laundromat and to the apartment using public transportation. That experience gave me just a much better understanding of what it's like to live on your own. And I'm confident that the skills I learned there will help me to live a more productive, successful life. And I want to ask you to keep the school open.
Thank you very much.
Representative Gelzer and committee, my name's Cheryl Gakin. I am Adam's mother. I'm from Lake Oswego, Oregon. I'm going to just jump in and talk to you from my heart. You can read this story. Bottom line is the ball's being dropped on Adam in Lake Oswego School District. My son is in a life skills placement right now as an eighth grader. His vision specialist from the regional program only saw him at his computer for the very first time 3 weeks ago. That is unconscionable. Adam's been at a computer since he was 5 years old in the school district. I asked the district to support an assessment at the School for the Blind, and our director was befuddled. He looked at me, and I looked at him, and I said, "What's the problem? You own the technology. We just want to go find out if we're using it correctly." And he said, "My concern is I won't be able to do what they will tell me Adam needs." I'm here today to tell you the system is broken and serving this population of people. I will fight to the ends of the earth to see to it that these children do not slip through the cracks. My son is not being served well. You would think, because we live in one of the wealthier school districts, that he is getting everything he needs. It's a Pinto versus a Chrysler. The Pinto is broken. Regional services can't collect data. They can't give direct service. They can't collaborate with the team. They don't have enough time. Adam maybe gets 2 hours of direct service a month. Nobody knows what to do at his computer. His eyes have been written off. My son can see. He has low vision. I petition you to slow down. Ask us stakeholders who are receiving services for our children through the regional program. I think you'll find out that it's inadequate, that it's broken. I don't know what these 30-some children are going to do if you pour them into the system next fall. They're not going to succeed, and they're not going to thrive. And I'll be back to talk to you about that. Adam's life is at risk right now. He's heading into transition, and nobody knows what to do with him. If we can label him as retarded and we can dummy him down into a life skills placement and maybe put him into an ESD classroom in the LEAP program, mission accomplished. We'll never get him out. So I'm here to ask you to please slow down. I understand that we need to look at our resources, but we need to care for this very special population of people that are so vulnerable. And Representative Gelzer, you know our little girls are at risk for being sexually abused. You've been quoted in the paper. If they can't see what's coming, they're going to get hit. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Taryn Seidel Hartz, and I have a very cute little blind, deaf child named Brianna, who is 18 years old and is what Adam was only 2 years later. 2 years ago, or for 2 years, I should say, she was attending Southridge High School. And that is also one of the richest high schools in the state. I will try to not get emotional when I talk about this because it was the most horrible experience of my life. She's attending now the blind school. She's been there for 5 months, and she is blossoming. It's incredible. The 2 years that she was attending Southridge, she forgot her times tables. She went backwards like I can't tell you. I ended up getting a lawyer and was about to completely sue the school district. It was ridiculous. Nothing was made available in large print for her. She did not get large print textbooks. At one of her IEPs, the vice principal basically told me that if I wanted Brianna to have math and science, that I was going to have to take it out of the school district and pay for it myself. When I said that that was against the IDEA, he said, I don't know what the IDEA is. I'm not kidding. I know the IDEA like the back of my hand, just like every other parent in this room. Brianna repeated drawing three times, because they had no other classes to put my child in. The fall of 2006, Southridge High School got artificial turf. It cost $900,000. $75,000 of that was from donations and from fundraising. But the rest of that money was from our taxpayer dollars. That was because all of the other schools in Beaverton School District also had artificial turf at the same cost. What I'm asking you for is to consider the problems that my daughter went through are similar. They're what her son is going through now. My daughter didn't get her first large print textbook until her very final semester, when we finally got the lawyer and the help to get into the Oregon State School for the Blind. Previous to that, I was told that Brianna was too high functioning to go to the Oregon State School for the Blind. One of the other frustrations to me is that at the end of Brianna finally going there, and this was only recently, my daughter admitted to me that she wanted to hurt herself. I found out that because my daughter was so depressed, because she was so isolated when she was at Southridge, that she was suicidal. So I'm going to ask you to consider, since I found out, Representative Gilzer, about your concern for our women in this state, that you please slow down. I'm a nurse practitioner in the emergency room. I do rape exams. And I know what it's like. I don't want to see my daughter on the other end of that, nor do I want to see her on the other end of an overdose. Please, please, do what's right.
Thank you all very, very much. So our next panel is John Hinman, Bill Johnson, and Kayla Flannery. So the third. Oh, no. Oh, that's okay.
John is next to you on your right.
Oops.
It's a swivel chair.
Yeah. I'm going to end up on the floor.
So you're in seat number one, and the mic is directly in front of you.
Welcome.
And so as you start, Kayla, maybe we can start on your end. And remember to get really close to the microphone, because for some reason those ones aren't as loud as this one. And start by stating your name, please.
So me?
Yes, you please.
I'm Kayla Flannery. I am a current student at the Oregon School for the Blind. I've only been going there for about 6 months. I just want to tell you a little bit what I went through before coming to the Oregon School for the Blind. I was diagnosed with a conversion disorder in eighth grade. At that point, they said it was medically necessary for me to stay home. I was unstable to stay at school. Then they decided, well, let's try homeschooling. The state would only pay for 5 hours a week for a tutor. How ridiculous. I thought to myself, 5 hours, wow, that's a one day a kid gets, usually in school. I got lonely, and I was getting stressed, and so we went back to our school district, and they said, try SK Online. Well, the reason we found that was so difficult, you must have a ninth grade level reading. I don't. That made it very difficult for me. At that point, I was so depressed, so lonely. I had no friends. I thought, where am I going to go? What am I going to do with my life? I came to OSB, and just, it was amazing with the staff members, the students. It was amazing what I've learned. I am now learning Braille. My reading level has gone up. My math level has been going up with our math teacher who does tutoring. I have physical education now. I haven't had that since I was in fifth grade. I've lost a lot of weight since me being happy and me working out. And it's great for me. And I just want to say, if you take away OSB, you're taking away my family. It's not just the school. It is my family. Thank you.
Thank you. And there's two microphones on the table, so when you're in the middle, you have to pull the one over. Thanks.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah.
My name is John Hinman, and when I was 15, I lost my vision, and up to that point, I was a fully sighted mainstream kid. And so just about to go into freshman year, I lost my vision, and that made high school very daunting, because I had to cope with trying to be able to function while being blind as well. So I had two choices, to continue mainstream or go to the School for the Blind. So I decided to give the School for the Blind a try, and there I learned Braille and cane techniques and how to use adaptive technology, among many other things necessary in order to cope, as well as finding support in others who faced the same challenges I did. And once I was good with that stuff, I got my GED through the support of the school, and also completed 1 year of community college and graduated one term with honors in trigonometry and had offers from fraternities to go to school with them, and that made me feel great. And also, I learned how to play goal ball at the School for the Blind, which is a sport for visually impaired people, and it's not for people, you know, it's very tough. You have this 2.5-pound molded rubber ball with bells in it, and these guys the size of gorillas roll this thing at you in speed of excess of 30 miles an hour, and you have to jump in the way to win. And it's very thrilling. And through the School for the Blind, I got on their goal ball team, and we went up and played a tournament at the Vancouver School for the Blind. And there I got picked up on a regional team, and I've played at the Men's National Championships in Pennsylvania, at the Youth National Championships in Florida, and I've also played at the International Youth Championships in Colorado Springs, where me and six other guys from different states fought all the way to the gold medal match and played against Germany. We had to play Canada and Taiwan. We met blind people from other countries. It was amazing. And then now I'm trying out for the men's Olympic team so I can go to London in 2012. And I don't think I would have had any of those experiences or felt anywhere as good about myself as I do now if I hadn't attended the School for the Blind. And besides, if you think about it, if you take a blind person and put them in the mainstream, no matter what, even if you teach them how to use their cane or Braille, give them their books in Braille, they're still at a disadvantage among their peers there, because you have to feed the fire of their drive, otherwise they will go nowhere. I mean, because that's the reason there's schools for the blind in the first place. If you take them away, then you're just starting back over at square one. So,
thank you.
Bill.
Oh, okay, here you go.
How do I follow that?
My name is Bill Johnson, Representative Gelzer, and members of the House Committee on Education. I'm employed at the School for the Blind as a teaching assistant. My job duties there are twofold. By the way, I'm very honored to be sitting at the same table with these two. The first I want to talk about of my duties is the on-campus radio station, which I know that several of you who took a tour about a month ago got to see the station, and we're very proud of that program. It's a 24/7 webcasting radio station and provides an authentic work environment for students who have it on their IEP to work in the radio station. They learn a variety of skills which will help them in other jobs: punctuality, common courtesy, communication, organizational skills such as filing, cooperation, and problem solving. And that's a big issue. Our students have a great deal of fun when they're in the radio station. They have a blast, basically, and we develop a lot of hams. While they're learning, they're just thoroughly enjoying themselves. And like I say, it's probably one of the most popular programs we have on campus. My other job duty is the mathematics tutor, and these two sitting beside me are one's a current student and one is a former student, and we have established a tutoring center at the school specifically for that purpose of teaching mathematics. We have shelves and shelves of Braille math books and all of the specialized equipment we need to do so. Think back when you were taking math. Some of you may have done very well, but some of you may have had some difficulties with algebra and so forth. And think about what that would be like learning those skills when you're blind. These students have to know literary Braille. They also have to know Nemeth code, which is a Braille math, which is separate from literary Braille. We now have software, and by the way, the computer age has been a great equalizer for us. We have an audio graphing calculator, which is a software, and by the way, that was developed by a totally blind professor at Oregon State University. And we have another software, which is called Virtual Pencil Algebra, which allows the students to write their homework on the software so they can turn it in to their teacher. And after all, we're after as much independence as we can gain, because the more we can get away from having to track down someone with sight to help us, the better off we are. John here was...
So I have to ask you to summarize, because the beeper said so. The beeper went off. I need to ask you
what
to
beeper?
Summarize.
I didn't hear any beeper. Real quick, I just wanted to say that John graduated last year.
He took four mathematics classes
at Chautauqua, which I don't believe he would have done otherwise without our services, and he got straight A's, which included basic algebra up to college trigonometry. Kayla is currently in pre-algebra, and like she said, improving all the time. And so, to summarize, I just want to say, please don't extinguish this light of hope for many of our visually impaired in Oregon, and I thank you.
Thank you. And I have to say, it's an honor to get to see you in person. I've received many letters, and you're a very famous math instructor.
Oh, my.
Yeah. You're cited frequently. Thank you very much.
Your reputation precedes you.
Yeah.
So our next set of folks is Dalton Williams, Devin Slater, and Holly Flannery.
Thank you.
And the microphone's right there.
Yeah, there it is.
I'm Dalton Williams. I am currently a student at the School for the Blind. I have been going to the school for several years. I have excelled in everything that I have done there. The staff are wonderful. They have helped me in so many ways: math, English, writing, reading, technology, all those subjects. And when I was in public school, I wasn't getting the things that I needed to succeed. I was always falling behind. When I went to the school when I was 9, I've excelled so much, exceeded expectations. Teachers, the dorm program, how to be safe in the community, mobility, cooking, cleaning. This normal school district couldn't teach me that. They couldn't teach me that today. Wow.
You're doing well.
What I'm saying is that I think, and many other people think, would have the same opinion, closing the School for the Blind would be a mistake for me and many others. If it wasn't there, me or many others would not be where they are today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Devin Slater. I'm a student at the Oregon School for the Blind. I have been going there since the second half of my 7th grade year. I am currently an 8th grader. When I started attending the Oregon School for the Blind, I had D's and F's in all my classes. I was not getting the help I needed. I would have orientation and mobility twice a year for an hour. I would get my textbooks in large print, but I would not get my classroom assignments. My science teacher would hand me an assignment and be like, if you want it enlarged, go do it yourself. That's not okay with me. I go to the Oregon School for the Blind, and I've excelled in math, reading, grammar, science, orientation mobility, cooking, cleaning, planning an outing, just making friends in general. I've had a lot of help from a lot of teachers. Bill has been a really good influence on me with math. Joyce with classroom, like just making a plan and doing orientation and mobility. Renee, he makes my day. He's always so funny. Eric and Dalton and John, they all introduced me into goalball when I first came there. And I now play goalball, and I'm addicted to that game.
Very.
It's like the most addicting thing ever. I mean, I would play that any day, any time. Somebody could wake me up at 2 a.m. and I'd go play. But, no, closing the school would not be a good option because I could not get the help I needed in a mainstream school. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Holly Flannery, and I'm a parent of an OSB student. My daughter, Kayla, was mainstreamed and did okay through 6th grade. And then middle school happened. And middle school wasn't so bad except for the kids and the way they treated her. She was an outcast. She was somebody different. And you know what it's like to be different in a world where being alike matters? And that wasn't so bad. But then she had a teacher that just didn't understand that she couldn't see the work. She had a great visual help, but that doesn't help when you have a teacher that works against you. She got a stress disorder, which made school impossible. We went by ambulance so many times I can't even begin to tell you until I said enough. We pulled her out. We homeschooled her. She became severely depressed. And I said, well, this isn't going to work. You know, the tutoring wasn't enough. She was stuck in the house. She didn't have friends. She had maybe two friends. You know, you're visually impaired. You don't have very many sighted friends. And you get into it, they want to be like everybody else, but there isn't everybody else in a regular school. So down the road, we tried different things. I put her in OSB, and I had to push for it. They all said, well, yeah, maybe that's not the place for her. And I said, well, where is a place for her? It's become the best thing I've ever done for my daughter. She's flourished. She has grown so much. She's become so independent. She's learned more there in this year than she learned at all in middle school. She has a higher reading level now than she did in third grade, which she didn't gain after third grade and regular school. So, you know, this is a really important thing. You guys are affecting the kids. And I think if it was put out there where more parents with visually impaired kids or blind kids realized they could take their kids to the blind school, they might do that. I didn't know it was an option until it became medically necessary. And I think that's really a disservice to the blind kids and the visually impaired kids of the state of Oregon. They should know that this is an option. You wouldn't have this high debt ratio income, you know, looking at it money-wise per student, if the people knew they could take their kids there. And I think that's something that really needs, you really need to look at and need to, you know, see that. The school district's getting the money for them. And, of course, they want to keep them because the school gets more money because they have a visually impaired disabled student there. And then they don't get all the services, so they pocket the money. So let's put them somewhere that they flourish and they do well. And, you know, I'm not talking just about friends. I mean, it's really, it's all the other things that they learn. And it's important to the parents. It's important to the child. And it's and the staff treats the children there just so wonderfully. And the parents. And let me tell you, they go a long way for my child. You know, she needs a lot of medical support, and they're there for her. And I can't get that at a public school. You close the school, my daughter will be staying at home. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you all very much.
May I add one more thing?
Sure.
That before I came to the school, my parents knew that the school was an option for me, but they had to threaten my school district with an attorney.
Yes.
That is not okay. It shouldn't be that way. It should be an option for every blind student going to any school district in Oregon or anywhere else.
Thank you very much. So our next panel is Shyamali?
Shyamali.
All right. I believe you. And June Kramer and Rebecca Bergen.
And I don't even know where to begin. If you close the school for the blind, you'll be doing...
Shyamali, can you pull the microphone closer to you so everyone in the back can hear what you have to say?
I don't have the vision to see where it is.
Yeah. It's right in front
there.
Of you.
Right there.
Oh. There you go. Perfect.
Let's try that again. Hi, my name is Shyamali. Let me begin by saying... If you close the school for the blind, I don't know if any of you are familiar with autism. However, let me persist to say that if you close down the school for the blind, kids like my sister Kara, kids like my sister Terry, we got no services from our school district. We got put out in the hall or in separate rooms from our peers. Is this what you really want if you're going to close down the school? And let me also say that I never was able to get a GED. I was never able to beat benchmarks. I was never able to get a diploma of any kind. It was also because of many disabilities Had I been tested earlier, things would have been different, such as communication disorder, such as MRDD. Had I known about these things, I would have been okay. But unfortunately, my school district did a disservice to me. And do you really want OSB? If it wasn't for OSB, I wouldn't have been able to make friends. I wouldn't have been able to have a self-esteem. I wouldn't have been able to fight for what I'm fighting for now. I wouldn't have been able to go on to a group home or get a job, even a sheltered workshop job. I wouldn't have even been able to do that. And let me tell you, kids with other disabilities are getting no services in their district. And I hate to remind you that this is where you're going to end up if you close OSB. This is where you're going to be. I am a product of that experience. And I've also been on the other side of the fence, having to say to my mom, what about a communication board for my sister? And you know, it's sad that children have to know about things that the school district should tell the parents later than sooner. Sorry for getting emotional, but these are my sister's lives and mine on the line here. You guys have made the mistake for us. Do you want to repeat what you did to us then, now? So think about that. When you all are sitting in your little boxes, think about what you're doing.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. My name is June Kramer, and I currently go to the Oregon School for the Blind. When I was in public school, I never got the experience that I have at OSB now than I did before. I had very few friends. Now I have tons of friends. When I was in public school, I was made fun of. No one would want to go to prom with me. Sometimes my teachers wouldn't give me help on any assignments, on math or anything. When I was in algebra, one of the teachers just wrote on the board basically what the assignment was, and I said, I don't understand. She would just explain it to me really fast and then walk away. While I'm here at OSB, I get all the help I can with assignments. If I don't understand it, I ask for help, and I get it. And I get it more clearly than I would in public school. At home in Sherwood, I wasn't able to go anywhere on public transportation because it just wasn't safe. Here, I can go to Chemeketa Community College because I have more mobility training, and I'm able to do that on my own. When I was at home, I was never able to do that on my own. I would have to have more mobility, which I wasn't able to because of the classes I was in. I would only have it 2 times a month. And then when I was pulled out of class for that, I would either be sick on one of those months or not, and then I'd have mobility and miss it, and then I'd get a failing grade. Here, I don't miss as much. I am already at the end of the school day, and then I come back and I eat dinner, and then I get back to a normal schedule. At school, I was never able to do that. I was always behind. So if you shut down the school, I'm not going to be able to be as successful as I am now. When I'm at home, I'm going to have to go get a college class or go get a job, and I'm not going to be prepared for what's out there. And now I'm getting all these self-defense classes to prepare me for what's going to happen later, all these budget classes for all the bills I'm going to probably have to pay later in life. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
My name is Rebecca Bergen, and I go to the Oregon School of the Blind. And, semester. I've been going to the Oregon School of the Blind for, I think, 2 years. And the time has been really good, really great. With all these friends that I'm making and... If you shut it down, I won't have much friends out there. Since I never had any good friends to begin with before I came here. And, I wasn't able to learn much at my other schools that I've been at, so if you shut it down, I won't learn things as quickly as I did here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So before I call the next panel, I'm sending a message up. Is the TV on up in... Yeah, up in the overflowed room. So in hearing room D is Sylvester DeBray, Annie Guthrie, and Brianna Holden Dean. And if you can hear me, start making your way downstairs. And after this next panel, we'll have you up. So while we're waiting for those three to make their way downstairs, T. Joseph Carter, Karen Lisowski, and Matthew Peterson. And you can pull the other chair away if you'd like. I love your hat.
Chair.
Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And being the an old principal from Marshfield High School, the pirate motif was the mascot for the Pirates. So I do appreciate this and mentioned that when I first came here, that you were here to make me feel at ease. So thanks for wearing your hat.
And you can start in whatever order makes sense for the three of you.
You're talking, there's a microphone right here, and you need to tell him your name.
Matt.
It's Matt. His name's Matthew. Matthew Peterson.
What?
Matt, where do you go to school?
Oh.
And what do you do there?
Jesse.
Huh? You see Jackie? And what about Liz? Do you see her?
Yeah.
And does she make you work?
Movie.
She doesn't make you watch movies. Does she make you work?
Yeah.
And do you
ba,
like...
Ba, ba.
Yeah. Do you like to work?
Whoa.
Good answer.
Whoa.
No, you don't. But what do they say? What does Miss Liz tell you have to do every single day? Work?
Yeah.
And then, what do you get money to work?
Cookie.
You get cookies. And so what do? Do you do recycling?
Yeah.
What else do you do there?
Movie.
You watch movies?
Ba, ba, ba.
Bad boys, yeah, because you're a bad boy. What else do you do at the... Oh.
Jackie.
Huh? You see Jackie. And do you shred papers now?
Yeah.
And you don't like to do that, do you?
Mm.
No, I won't make you do it now, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Can Mommy talk now?
Yeah.
Okay, and by the way, he's wearing his pirate hat because tomorrow you probably can all come. But they're having their big presentation at the OSB, which nobody mentioned, but they're doing their song and dance routine.
Oh,
and they have
oh.
their band playing and all kinds of things. So it's their family night to entertain
Wonderful.
Us. And it's a pirate theme. So Matt's getting ready for it.
My name is Karen Lasowski, and I'm Matthew Pedersen's mom. I'm mom of a child that attends OSB, and I have similar stories to a lot of these other parents and students. I had a child who had some issues that we went into the school district. I am a mother that I pretty much have a lively attitude towards life, so I don't feel like I, you know, poor me, I got this kid. You know, I felt really lucky to have him, and I always do. He's got a great sense of humor, and he treats me like any, he just turned 17, and like any 17-year-old child, what do you tell me when you want me to go away?
Go!
Right. He is just like a really normal child. The thing is that I had him in the school district from the very, I knew he was blind the very day he was born, which I'm unusual from anybody else because he was, opacified corneas and he was blind the day he was born. I was on the blind, a commission for the blind in our little town that we lived in, and I got on the phone with the lady and the chair of our committee, and I said, do I get a black and white or colored mobile for the crib, you know, because I wanted to know. I didn't know. I traveled to Maryland to find out who the best person to get cornea transplants for my child. We were living in Northern California at the time. He was, as soon as I had the baby, within 12 hours, he was at Stanford Hospital. I had some strings I could pull, and I did everything I could. I've done everything for my child. I had him in the regular school district. I finally had a teacher that said, I had a teacher where 6 weeks into the first, after he started school, she did not know Matt could even say hi. She did not know Matt had any skills at all. He was in a low vision. She had him sitting in a classroom with a disco ball going around. I had gone to the School for the Blind about a year and a half because I had heard about it and went down there on my own to visit it, but there was no way I was sending my kid away. I couldn't do it. I'm not that kind of mom. I'm a real hands-on mom, and I couldn't do it. Well, at that point, I said, let's go back and revisit that because I couldn't do, you know, they wouldn't trade teachers in the school district. I ended up, per se, sending him for a six-week assessment to the School for the Blind, and I couldn't not send him and could not fight for that. I had to fight the Beaverton School District, literally fight them, literally, I can't even tell you. I didn't hire an attorney, but I got almost to the verge of that just to let him go to School for the Blind. Here he's sitting in classroom looking at a disco ball with a teacher that has no idea what to do with him. And in 6 weeks, he went from doing that to eating with a fork and going potty on the potty, okay? And I had an eighth grader. And in 6 weeks, he was doing this. And I was like, oh, my God. I've actually literally told people before that at that point, I'll pay someone $5,000 right now if you can get him to go to the bathroom, you know, my older children's friends and stuff, so we could get him to do it. Matt has gone to the School for the Blind for 2.5 years. It's just the most amazing thing. I cannot tell you. This is not a mute child. This is not he's a life skills child. But he is going to be the greeter at Walmart. He is going to work, you know, pushing recycling. He's going to have things that I only envisioned for him and that I knew that were out there impossible and that I've always given him the option.
And the timer is saying that you have to summarize.
Okay. So anyways, what I will tell you is that every single child in the whole entire state of Oregon should be lucky enough to be blind, because these are the luckiest kids there are, so that they can go and get the individual kind of education that you get at that school. That's what I'm saying.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Okay, get in your chair.
Welcome.
I am Joseph Carter. I am the president of the Oregon Association of Blind Students. I am a college student myself. I'm a graduate student at Western Oregon University studying special education, and I am here speaking also on behalf of about five of my classmates who are currently in class where I ought to be. I could tell you many of the same things that you've already heard tonight from other students about the need to fight for accommodations, textbooks always late. I was one of those kids who could not get textbooks because the itinerant teachers were so overbooked with students. I saw mine about once a month in order to get my books in large print. Large print because, you know, I could read large print even though it gave me migraine headaches, so obviously I should not learn Braille. But the large print books were not available, so I got to make my own large print book standing at the copier for hours on end while my class went on without me. And that, you know, that still happens today. But we're here to talk about the Oregon School for the Blind and what to do with it. Well, you know, I was in the Salem-Keizer School District where, you know, it's not the smallest district, it's not the largest district, and that kind of thing happens there. What happens out in Hermiston or Florence or Sun River or Gold Beach? If you have one blind student in the school, what are the odds that person is going to learn Braille? Well, I happen to know that for one student in Florence, that student also sees an itinerant teacher once a month who drives from Eugene. By the way, we are paying these teachers to drive out from Eugene to Florence to serve the one student for an hour once a month. That time is being wasted. If you are lucky enough to be able to learn Braille because you have, you know, a small enough caseload for your itinerant teacher to be able to teach it, you find that Braille is taught one-on-one. At a place like the School for the Blind, one Braille teacher can teach six or eight students at a single time. So we come back once again to the question of what do we do with the school? Well, part of the problem, so many people are saying they have to fight to get to the School for the Blind because we don't send people there. It is in the Oregon statutes that we only send people there as an absolute last resort. There is one single line in the law that says you cannot send them there unless there is no other alternative. My suggestion, remove that. If you remove that, give the school its funding, let them build the program they need. You know, the question is, they don't have accreditation. Give us 2 years. We'll get them the accreditation that they need and let them build the school that they ought to have. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all very much. So our next panel is from upstairs, Sylvester DeBray, Annie Guthrie, and Brianna Holden-Dean.
Don't not like me.
Welcome.
I'm a little bit nervous, so I haven't done this before. So,
you're going to do great. But when you start, there's people in the back that really want to hear you, and the microphones aren't very loud. So talk as loud as you can. And if you'll please start by stating your name, that way we'll always know for the record who you are.
Okay. Ready?
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, my name is Sylvester DeBray, and I live in Portland, Oregon. I currently go to the School for the Blind, and I just want to tell you a little background about my school life. In elementary school, I did okay. I had a little bit of trouble with my not my adopted mother, but how can I say it? my natural mother, my real mom, because she was was on a lot of drugs, and I wasn't really doing good in school in the earlier grades. But as I got older, I started having responsibility in my work, and whatever it was. And then now I came to middle school, and that's where I had a hard time. Seventh grade was okay, it was good. Eighth grade, I hung out with the wrong friends, so I did not know what friends to hang out with, and I basically got in trouble, and it apparently destroyed my self-esteem. I just thought I hate myself. But, you know, I'm going to go on and, you know, try to finish high school. I got high school and there was a lot of friends, but, you know, there was no help. Basically, I had aides that just wrote things that were on the board, just wrote it out in pencil and said, here you go, that's it. And then when I graduated in 2008, I went to school for the blind, and of course I did have trouble fitting in because I was making mistakes left and right. Most of them were budgeting and behavior problems, and it again basically destroyed my self-esteem. And I found some friends: June Kramer, Devin Slater, Dalton Williams, John Hinman, and they helped me through the struggle. The staff there was great. Joyce Lonsford, Jim Ford, Joey McAvoy, Sherry Riley, Tina Fitzsimmons, and many more. Melanie Lindquist. But anyway, let me get on to the parts I want to explain. If I hadn't learned how to get out in the world, go to my favorite stores, restaurants, or do any of that stuff, I would have been, you know, I wouldn't have succeeded into going into those places or making friends or do anything. If you close the school down, that's it for me. I lost the opportunity. I'm done for. I have disappeared into the abyss. I'm never coming back. That's about it.
So please
do not do this. I'm begging you. And can I just throw one more thing in there?
Sure.
Goal ball. The sport. If I wouldn't have known about it, I wouldn't have been in sports. I couldn't participate in football, basketball, any of that stuff. Goal ball is what I'm good at, and I've gotten better through the years. And I just want to say, you know, we all have our troubles with teachers, and you say inside, I hate this person, I hate this, you know, but deep down you really feel that they're helping you. Thank you very much, Sylvester DeBray. Get her done.
Thank you, Sylvester.
You're welcome. I'll be here all night. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm glad.
My name is Brianna Dean.
Last year and the year before, I went to a school called Southridge, which was not a very good school. I had trouble learning. I had a lot of trouble. I became depressed. Became a little suicidal for some unknown reason. I don't feel like that at OSB. I'm really happy there. But at Southridge, I wasn't happy. One of the teachers called me a troublemaker and an odor of controlling, which was nice, which is not true, which is not nice. And I did not have very many friends at Southridge. I have friends now at OSB. I don't feel like I'm controlling. I'm not depressed. Nobody calls me. I never hear the word know it all at all. And nobody ever tells me to shut up unless they're kidding. I tell them to shut up too when I'm kidding. But I was told to shut up a lot at Southridge by some of the students, and nobody even did anything about it.
sometimes when I would try to defend myself at Southwood, they wouldn't let me. I kind of just would cry sometimes because I was stressed out and depressed, and people, the teachers would think I was throwing a tantrum when I was really just really sad and depressed and frustrated and stuff like that. So please do not close out on OSB, okay? Please, please leave it open. Leave it alone. Okay?
Thank you, Brianna. Representative Gelser, members of the House Education Committee, my name is Annie Guthrie. I live at 360 Leslie Street, right across from the library. I'm speaking for my neighbor, Marion Milligan. She's here tonight, but she has aphasia. And for her significant, her husband, Bill Dugan, who is not able to be here to speak for himself either. I'm speaking for Nancy and Jack Fisher, for Jay and Nancy Burr, for Sharon Edwards, for John Drayle. More people would have come, but we didn't know about this until the very last minute. I was out tutoring at Mount Angel when I got a call at 5 o'clock, and I came as fast as I could. But it seems like every 2 years, there's some way that they want to take the School for the Blind, and until this year, when you just want to get rid of it, they've been wanting to shuffle it together with the School for the Deaf. Well, those of us who live in the neighborhood wonder why. They never want to shuffle the School for the Deaf students over to the School for the Blind, but we think we've got it figured out. It's because nobody wants to buy the property around the School for the Deaf. There's too much interest in buying and building and putting medical facilities on the School for the Blind property. It's too valuable. Now, I feel like a dirty, old, selfish person because I'm not here like these people are to speak for the school itself, although I agree with everything I've heard. I'm here because that's my neighborhood. That's our neighborhood, and I'm here for a lot of us. It's a nice setting for the kids that are at the School for the Blind who are starting to learn their skills of getting around in the neighborhood. And I like to go around and see them learning how to get around in the neighborhood because it's a nice open space. It's quiet. It's not heavily trafficked. Oh, sure, there's Mission Street right there and Liberty and Commercial, but we're a neighborhood, and the School for the Blind is on an open area where they can go and practice their skills, and I think these kids will tell you that I'm right about this.
She is right about it. We can be both.
Thank you, honey. And yet, and in our neighborhood, we appreciate that too. I'm 68 years old, and I have bone on bone in my hip, and I go slow, and I like to walk around my neighborhood. But if they put in all those things that they want to put in there, it's going to be traffic, 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 and it won't be the same neighborhood. And some of us don't want to move just because the medical people want to put stuff in there. What will happen to us if our neighborhood has that high traffic that there's going to be if you change it the way you want to? The temptations and blandishments you must be under from people setting forth plausible and misguided. Rationalizations to soothe you as you give them what they want must be amazing. Members, plug your ears. Captain Gelser, have your sailors tie you to the mast and sail past the sirens. Do not do this to the School for the Blind or to our neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Oh, Sylvester, did you have something to add?
Yes. And it wasn't for me, I wouldn't have my first girlfriend. Get real girlfriends at mainstream schools, let alone, you know, get support from them. And Shamali Brooks is one of my girlfriends. And I really want to thank her.
Thank you very much for sharing with us. Thank you all very much.
All right, you too.
Thank you.
So next we're going to have Morgan Allen and Catherine White. Sign up, but I invited him anyway. Because we like you to come to our education committee meetings. Please.
Madam Chair, for the record, Morgan Allen with the Department of Education. Thank you for noting for the record that I did not sign up, but I believe you've called me up here because you'd like me to sort of reiterate what the position of the Superintendent of Public Instruction and the Department of Education are in regards to the future of the School for the Blind, and I'll restate for the committee what I've already come and testified in favor of, that the superintendent supports co-location of the School for the Blind on the campus of the School for the Deaf, and I'd be happy to answer any questions and make myself available to the committee, but we've already come in and made our case, and you have our written testimony, but I would make myself available to answer any questions of the committee at this time.
Great. Thank you, Morgan. Catherine.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Catherine White, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon DD Coalition. Obviously, this is a very difficult hearing for all of us. I have many friends, many people that I consider friends, longtime friends, in this audience. The DD Coalition represents 26 disability groups, parent groups, and provider organizations who are concerned about issues that relate to people with developmental disabilities. We support the closure of the School for the Blind and the dedication of all of the funds and resources targeted to improving services to all kids with vision and blind, all children who experience, children and youth who experience vision disabilities and blindness. I think that there is no question that if you were to meet with groups of parents who have kids with very different disabilities, you would hear the same very compelling arguments for residential options, particularly during transition years. It is a difficult and challenging time for all parents. That being said, we recognize that this is a very difficult decision, but we believe it's an appropriate policy decision, that Oregon's educational system should not be developing and maintaining residential schools paid out of educational funding. We need to address the kind of issues that have been raised tonight at this hearing for all children and all youth who have vision impairments and blindness. And I think that it is compelling for all of us that we pay attention to the stories that we've heard tonight and look at local school districts. The answer from our perspective is not simply to create a school or maintain a residential school for kids with visual impairments and blindness. I've also submitted testimony by the Disability Rights Oregon, which is an organization that provides legal support and advocacy on behalf of people with disabilities. They've addressed two general issues here of federal law that they believe applies in this situation, specifically around IDEA and the Olmstead Act. And I encourage you to take a moment to read those. Thank you.
Thank you both very much. So our next panel is Elizabeth Reed Owens, Adina Terberg, and Orlando Doni. Donnie?
I'm actually representing them, so you can add.
Okay, two more people. So I would invite Art Stevenson and Salim Akridge, please.
Good
My name is Elizabeth Reed Ellens. I am a teacher at the Oregon School for the Blind, have been there. I'm in my 31st year of working in this in the special education field, and 29 years at the Oregon School for the Blind. Obviously, you will know that I oppose, greatly, greatly oppose closure. I am here, though, tonight to represent two students and their families, because I've been asked to do that, parents that live a great deal, many miles away, Warm Springs and Pendleton. So I will, their testimony is being distributed, and I will read their words. Why the blind school should not close. Number one, because the services in our local school don't compare to that of the blind school. For example, the blind school is able to take children on field trips where our local school would not take Alex on any field trips. Number two, Alex was left in a small room and not able to be with other children except for maybe an hour a day. At the blind school, Alex is always with a group of his peers. I want to insert a comment of my own here in respect to that. As part of what we do at the Oregon School for the Blind, we offer the resource of providing not only short-term placement at the school, but if a school district asks for assistance, one of our teachers will go and visit that school and assist with that. Prior to Alex coming for the school, I was the teacher that was sent to Pendleton to help in that setting. His mother is correct. His classroom was a small room by himself in an elementary school. His mainstream opportunity was in a music class of, he was 10 at the time, so same age peers. I was with him through that process. He came in. This is a young man who is totally blind, has other disabilities. The class for the day was the distribution of music books and the teacher talking about those music books. How did that assist him in his educational setting? And that was how he was mainstreamed at this school. Number three, the local program Alex had made very little progress until the age of 11 when Alex started attending the blind school, which he has made leaps and bounds towards his goals of cane and personal care. Another comment.
Ms. Owens, I have to ask you to summarize, but since you're representing two people, I give you another minute and 30 seconds. How's that?
So you have the testimony, so I will summarize in part for Adina. She talks about the school being the miracle for her children, or for her child and her family. She offers suggestions. She offers even the opportunity for parents to volunteer because it means so much. And the school district was not sure about sending him, but she is now providing the transportation herself on a weekly basis so that Alex can attend the School for the Blind and get an education with his peers. I am now going to represent Orlando Doney, the father of Jeremy Doney. OSB has been invaluable to the education of my son, including mobility enhancement, social interaction, personalized programs pertaining to school curriculum and personal goals, proximity to public transportation and public programs and activities that can be accessed safely, an environment that is safe with a minimum of noise, musical exposure to renowned regional artists and musical activities. If you were part of the House chamber last Thursday morning, you heard Jeremy play. The School for the Blind meets the needs for parents and students that go beyond the intangibles of people that can see. There are not a lot of talented people that live in rural areas of the state that have the skills and support for these students academically and with daily living skills. Obviously, he says, the closing of the school shows no foresight for the needs of Oregonians who will become vision impaired and blindness. He compliments the Jefferson County School District for their patience, understanding, and diligence with working with him and the School for the Blind for educating his son. So I represent these two parents who could not make it because of the distance that they live, but it's important for them.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Celine, please.
Hi, my name is Salim Ackridge, and I'm a local resident of Salem. I went to the Oregon School for the Blind in 2000 and graduated in 2003. Don't close the Oregon School for the Blind. If you close the Oregon School for the Blind, then you're not hurting me, but you're hurting all of the other kids that are visually impaired that will not be able to come down here. You know, for I have a lot of memories when I went to the Oregon School for the Blind. You know, I was in the apartment program, and if it wasn't for the school, I would not have had learned how to live in an apartment and everything. And in high school, I had never had as many friends and stuff, but when I went to the Oregon School for the Blind, I made a lot of good friends and such, et cetera. And if it wasn't for the Oregon School for the Blind, I would not have known about the Oral Hall Foundation for the Blind, a summer camp that all of the visually impaired kids go to. And I'm saying, don't close the Oregon School for the Blind. You know, I ride the bus every day by it, and you see a lot of happy kids, you know, and a lot of staff I still know up to this day. I see them around, and I always ask, how is everything at the school and stuff? You know, and I learned a lot of job skills when I went and everything else. Don't take it away. Don't take the school away. Just in closing, I will always love OSB because OSB taught me a lot. And sincerely yours, Salim Ackridge. I love you, OSB. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Stevenson.
Hi, my name is Art Stevenson, and I'm the president of the National Federation of the Blind of Oregon. You've, members of the committee, you've all seen our organization once or twice here this year testifying against co-location of the Commission for the Blind and also the sale and termination of the Oregon School for the Blind. 2 years ago, the blind and the deaf came to this body and said, hey, we needed changes. We needed to make the system better. We needed to provide a better education for the deaf and the blind students here in Oregon. We set up two school boards, and they've made good recommendations to the Department of Education. But no pun intended, those recommendations have fallen on deaf ears. So far tonight, you've only heard one person testify in a positive for what this bill would do, and that's close the Oregon School for the Blind. I'm telling you, this body cannot destroy the blind children's dreams of getting an education and becoming productive parts of Oregon, getting jobs. We have a 70% unemployment rate throughout this country, and part of that reason is our kids aren't getting educated well enough to be able to obtain jobs. You've heard how the regional programs are not providing the kind of services that these children need, and it's a shame. I think you ought to turn around and gut and restuff 2834 and mandate to the Department of Education to make the School for the Blind a K-12 accreditation, to give blind students and their parents the opportunity to choose what they want. In Washington, they do that. And when a child that's in the regional program goes to the Washington School for the Blind, their competency increases in the first year by 1 to 5 years. Oregon students deserve the same. You need to do the right thing and let us work together to make the Oregon educational system for blind students a good one, not one that's just mediocre. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Can I have one thing? Sure. Thank you, Liz.
Don't close the school, because, you know, if you close the school, it'll hurt. And I met a lot of cool friends and stuff. And you know what? Every year, I see them and stuff, and I see the staff around, and I always ask them, how is the blind school these days? Because you know what? Without the Oregon School for the Blind, I would not have been able to meet all these the staff and the students that go there. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And our next panel is Tina Hansen, Aaron Hanna, and Kendra Schaber.
Thank you. Thank you very much. My name is Tina Hansen, and I'm very pleased to speak tonight. I also want to testify in opposition to closure of the State School for the Blind. One of the aspects that I'm not sure has been talked about is the apartment program at the school. That is a valuable program because it trains students to live on their own in an apartment. And if the school is closed, that aspect of the program would also be closed. I personally believe that that is a real asset. I'm also speaking as a former student of the State School for the Blind. It's how I knew about the apartment program. I also want to thank you for allowing me to comment that I believe that we need to be looking at other options. If at all possible, you know, I would love to see the buildings remodeled where the current school is. If the buildings cannot be saved, I'm certainly in favor of looking at different buildings, if at all possible, or just rebuilding a whole new campus somewhere, even if whether it be on the same property or maybe somewhere in another urban location, I don't know. I'm sure that's stuff that we'll have to be asking later. But I believe that whatever happens, the School for the Blind does need to stay open. And I personally believe that the students really need this. Because I have to be honest, every time I come to one of these, my heart really is heavy for the students. And just the thought of closing it really scares the hay out of me. So thank you for allowing me to speak tonight, and I'll be hearing what others have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, please.
My turn?
It's your turn.
Okay. Can you all hear me? Okay. Well, for the record, my name is Kendra Schaber, and I'm a former student because I graduated from the Oregon School for the Blind, also a member of the NFB of Oregon. And first off, I guess you can call me kind of one of the luckier ones. As a kid, was I discriminated against? You betcha I was. But I had a mom who fought for my services ever since I was 2 years old. And she fought hard and long. And let me tell you, I probably wouldn't have been there if I didn't get sent across to Burns, Oregon, just to be having the services and to keep from getting taken away. I went to the Oregon School for the Blind for 6 years, and I learned a lot of the basic like living skills, you know, Braille, mobility, all the daily living skills that's required, and of course the social life too. Then I went to Oregon City High School for 4 years for academics and graduated there. Then I went back for to brush up on my skills and to improve them. And I graduated last June. And first off, you know, I want to keep OSB open. I feel really sorry for any student who has to stay in their districts, get discriminated against, and of course, not get the services that they really, truly deserve and need. I believe that it will be a damaging effect if the Oregon School for the Blind gets closed for anybody who is blind, who cannot be mainstreamed in part or full. And I appreciate letting me come here and testify.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Gessler and the committee, I appreciate the time to be able to speak. My name is Erin Hanna, and I am now a volunteer at OSB, and I was a librarian for 30 years before that. I just called when I found out there was a school for the blind. I called them and I offered to read the newspaper. So they took me right away because I had done it previously. When I lived in Cincinnati, I volunteered for radio reading services. Plus, along with that, I was a personal reader for several blind adults. It's a fantastic experience. Both of them were. And so I called and I started reading on the newspaper, and they knew I was a librarian, and they happened to mention the media center, which hadn't had any attention in I don't know how long. Oh, I jumped right on that, and I get there and I see it, and it's been a lot of work, but well worth it. But I just want to tell you, well, first, gee, I don't know where to start. I can't possibly compete, not that that's what I want to do, with these students and the parents. It's just amazing. And anybody that would want to close OSB after listening to these guys, I completely agree with them. I don't think streamlining or main schooling them is the right move. I think it was a big popular deal a while back, but it's run its course. I don't think it should be a co-op with the School for the Deaf and with the School for the Blind. They're very different things. I don't know why people automatically think the same thing when they're talking about a blind person or a deaf person. They're not anything alike, and they both need special attention. You heard what it was like for these kids in regular schools. It's just amazing. And I hope this isn't offensive, but I think it needs to be addressed that perhaps there's just a lot of greed in this whole thing, and to close OSB, so because there's a lot of money the hospital is offered or whatever. It's just wrong. And I think OSB has proved itself, and I just don't know how anybody could consider closing it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I agree.
Right, next we have Marcy Ingledew and Yoshi Cardell. Please.
Do you want to turn the other two pages up? You got to get the two pages. You didn't like it.
For those of you that are wondering, we still have 1, 2, 3. Are there 2 John Hinmans or just 1 John Hinman? Is one of a kind. All right. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. We've got 16 more to go, unless there are 2 John Hinmans, in which case there would be 17. All right.
Chair Gelser, members of the committee. My name is Yoshi Cardell, and I am here on behalf of the Oregon Council on Developmental Disabilities. The Oregon Council on Developmental Disabilities is charged in federal statute to engage in systems change to improve the lives of individuals with developmental disabilities. We recognize that this is a very difficult and complicated decision. We are here today in support of the closure for the School for the Blind. As difficult as this decision appears at this time, we do believe that it is the right thing to do. We are here also in support of the language in the proposed legislation that assures any funds and resources that are currently associated with the School for the Blind that to ensure that they are dedicated to serve children and youth who are blind or visually impaired. We are keenly aware that these students will require comprehensive transition plans, ongoing support in their local school programs, access to assistive technology and resources for their families. Therefore, these funds should be protected and allocated for these purposes. The School for the Blind was established over a century ago, and at that time, it was known as the School for Deaf Mutes. Times have changed. Needs have changed. Federal laws have changed to provide guidance to ensure the rights of students with disabilities. The time has come to implement new models to address the needs of almost 900 blind and visually impaired students in Oregon. We would also like to recognize that the highly successful elements that have been identified in the School for the Blind, and we would encourage that all stakeholders work together to develop strategies to make them more widely available throughout Oregon. I thank you very much for this opportunity to testify today.
Thank you.
Good evening, Representative Gelser and the members of the committee. My name is Marcy Ingledew, and tonight I'm here wearing three different hats, so maybe I can get a little bit of extra time on my on the buzzer, but I'm here representing the Arc of Oregon. I'm currently the executive director. I'm also here representing Family and Community Together. We are a coalition of over 20 organizations that support families of children who experience disability in Oregon. But my most important role for me here tonight is the fact that I'm also a parent of a young man that has intellectual disabilities and a vision impairment. I've been fortunate because we've worked very hard to include him in his neighborhood school, and we've benefited from the programs through regional services when we were living in Southern Oregon in Grants Pass, and now that we're living in Salem. We've also benefited from the Commission for the Blind and from the School for the Blind. A little bit about the ARC. We are a statewide membership organization, and we advocate for individuals and families with developmental disabilities. We have been in existence for over 50 years. We were founded by parents when there were no services for individuals with developmental disabilities. We have a rich history. We're affiliated at the national level with the ARC of the United States. We have 13 chapters around Oregon, and we work with disability partners statewide to assure that there's program and services to meet the needs of all children and adults with disabilities. Clearly, we respect all the individuals that have testified tonight and understand what a difficult decision this is. It's a hard decision, and we certainly understand it. But attached to our testimony, we've also given you position statements that the ARC, our core values, things that we live by and that we find that's important. And one of the reasons we support the closure of the School for the Blind is because we believe in inclusion and education for students. These are the position statements that are the foundation for the reason we support the closure of the School for the Blind. It is vital to our constituents that we move forward so that all students, no matter the disability, are included in their community and in their school. It is not fair for a family to have to give up their child to receive services. So it's a fundamental right that children should be raised in their family home. In addition to the fundamental right of education and inclusion, you, as legislators, are put forth with a terrible economic crisis in Oregon right now. Respectfully, you have a huge job ahead of you. And because of that, you have to look at the entire system of service. You cannot just look at a few individuals. Currently, you have 31 children with multiple disabilities attending OSB at a biennium budget over $8.5 million, compared to 850 students statewide.
Marcy, I'm going to have to ask you to summarize pretty quickly.
In summary, it's important that we work together and that we remember that the stories you've heard tonight represent not just in children that have vision impairments, but you've heard stories that affect all children with disabilities. And what you've heard is a direct violation of IDEA rights in the school districts. So we want to partner with all of these individuals, with the legislature. We want to make sure that those rights and those things that are now being done illegally in school districts are addressed. And so we don't think that keeping the School for the Blind open is going to address those issues. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next we have Norm Jordan, Linda Mock, and Francis Young. And you can start without your third person. I'm sure they will arrive soon. Please go ahead.
Representative Gelser, members of the House Committee. For the record, my name is Norm Jordan. I'm a teacher of students with a vision impairment and an O&M specialist here in the local regional program. I have worked there for 24 years and previously worked with the Commission for the Blind in another state residential school for the blind in another state. I'm here to support OSB, not as it currently is, but what it could and should be. I think there are three misconceptions about OSB I'd like to discuss. First, it is a residential program, and the misconception is that this means most restrictive or institutional, when in fact having residential facilities is an important asset for a school for the blind as well as the school for the deaf. Residential should mean a placement option that provides opportunity for students to participate in a short-term intensive instructional program. Residential should equate with the best method of teaching students who are blind and visually impaired in independent living skills, where the student is receiving daily instruction in skills they need, such as dressing, personal grooming, clothing care, food preparation, etc. Having a residential option should provide students other than just those in the Salem area an opportunity to come to OSB and have a short-term program to learn Braille, assistive technology, vocational skills, and orientation and mobility in a city where there is public transportation. Lastly, residential must include the weekend option when needed if access to OSB is for all students in the state. Unfortunately, OSB's funding for the weekend program was cut some years ago, so students from Eastern Oregon and Southern Oregon have been kept from OSB. Providing a place for students to stay on the weekend during the summer programs would permit students in public school the availability to join with other students from across the state during the summer to socialize, explore new leisure activities, and continue to develop skills of the expanded core curriculum. The second misconception is concerning OSB not being accredited by the National Accreditation Council. As Representative Gelser pointed out at the debate for the Salem City Club, on the surface, this seems like a critical issue, but in fact, only 1/4 of the schools for the blind are accredited in the United States. The third misconception, I believe, is that regional programs can do it all. We cannot, and that is a fact. Without a residential center, regionals will be unable to fully meet the needs of our students. What OSB could and should be. I believe with the addition of a weekend residential program, an academic program such as online, and working as a team with regional programs, they would be a model resource for the 800-plus students in
Mr.
Oregon.
Mr. Jordan, I'm going to have to ask you to summarize, too, please.
If the needs of kids come first, please consider not closing OSB. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
For the record, I'm Linda Mock, and I'm an administrator of the Oregon Commission for the Blind. The commission opposes House Bill 2834 and closure of the school. As an agency responsible for vocational rehabilitation and independent living programs for adult blind Oregonians, we find the programs offered by the school to be beneficial to the youth that they served. An individual who is blind faces some unique challenges that everyday living poses for them, such as grooming, traveling in and around their environment, shopping, cooking, cleaning, laundry, etc. And these require alternative techniques and training in order to perform them successfully, effectively, and independently. We call these skills independent living skills, and they are essential for an individual to be able to live and work successfully as an adult in our society. The transition program, which I think some of the students and parents have eloquently described to you tonight, offers a unique opportunity for students to develop the skills that they need to live independently. This program provides a small apartment on campus where students learn how to budget, cook, clean, do laundry, all the skills that they need to live on their own. This level of intensive training is difficult to provide through the regional programs where students are living at home with their families and where they have little time to focus on independent living skills as they focus their time and energy on academics and graduation. We have seen tremendous growth and maturation in students who have gone through this program. These students are oftentimes able to exit the program and be ready to enter the workforce or go on for further vocational training. Without this program, we feel that the development of these skills would fall to the commission in our orientation and career center, which would further tax our available resources. The commission's largest program provides vocational rehabilitation services, helping individuals who are legally blind become successfully employed in the community. The agency has worked cooperatively with the School for the Blind for many years to assist youth who are transitioning from educational services to help them obtain employment. This partnership is particularly important for students with developmental or other disabilities in addition to being legally blind. We have had a cooperative agreement since 1991 whereby the school provides funds to the commission, which the commission then uses to match our federal vocational rehabilitation program to fund a Salem Summer Work Experience program. This summer SWEP offers an opportunity for blind youth from ages 16 to 21 to live on the campus of the School for the Blind and gain valuable work experience with the support and supervision of job coaches during the summer. Students who participate in this program have significant disabilities that result in a higher likelihood that they will require ongoing services and employment in order to be successful as adults. Students are able to experience work in jobs such as recycling, customer service, shredding, etc. And this program gives them a valuable opportunity to learn to follow directions, stay on task, and learn their areas of interest. Without these funds, the staff and support of the School for the Blind, the commission would not have the resources to offer this program.
Ms. Mock, I'm going to have to ask you to summarize as well.
In summary, I would say that each biennium, the School for the Blind offers $150,000 of donated funds to the Commission for the Blind, which is used to match $554,000 of federal money, which is used for transition services through the school system and through our agency. Without these funds, we would not be able to offer these programs. And we feel that the school is an important piece of a continuum of services from fully integrated mainstream up through the residential and particularly the intensive short-term services that are offered in the summer program. So on behalf of the Commission for the Blind, I urge you to vote against House Bill 2834. Thank you.
Thank you both very much. Our next panel is Neil Cleaver, Diana Cleaver, and Elaine Jenkins.
Oh,
You okay?
Yeah, we're good.
All right.
I was just explaining. I've been on a committee with the 9:30, so we're doing pretty well.
Committee, thank you. Welcome.
Good evening. My name is Elaine Jenkins, and I'm a resident here in Salem. And today I come to talk to you, and I'm kind of wearing two hats. One of those hats comes from my experience of working with school districts as a juvenile probation officer for 26 years. The other hat comes from my recently found awareness about the challenges of blind and visually impaired people that stems from my 92-year-old father's diagnosis of macular degeneration. So I will tell you that my first job out of college, I worked for the Motor Vehicles Division, and I remember asking myself after one legislative session, what are these people thinking? And I will tell you, when I read this bill, I had that same thought. So in the short time that I have to speak to you, I would like to comment about the realities and the vision of this House bill, because I have noticed that many things come out of here with a vision of what's going to happen out of this Capitol building, get signed by the governor, and the reality is so much different. So I don't know how many of you have attended IEP meetings at school. I bet Ms. Representative Roblin has. But let me tell you what I've learned about them in the past 26 years. First of all, there are many adults and perhaps one child in these meetings. The professionals outnumber the parent and the child. The discussion is about what the needs of the student are and what programs the district has to accommodate those needs. Many plans and ideas are tossed about, and one is finally chosen in the plan. Now, the secret is that generally the plan is decided before the meeting ever begins. This results in a plan that many times does not meet the student's needs, as the school or the district has no program that will ever fit the needs of that particular student. And the district tends to resist sending students out of district and out of even out of a school to other resources because it costs them money. The result is a failure of the plan. And the failure of the student to learn is then, in another meeting, attributed to the student or the parent for not cooperating with the plan. And there is no acceptance of responsibility for the fact that these students are offered services that don't fit their needs. And even with the best intentions of the people involved, in a best-case scenario, what I can tell you is that the services, if you send students back September 1st, will not be properly served. First of all, by the time this bill gets signed, and we've learned today that superintendents don't really even know it exists, we will be into May, and I will tell you from my experience that no new plan is going
to happen. Ms. Jenkins, you need to summarize, please.
My mother was a very wise woman, okay? She told me never to buy things because they were cheap, because often they'd be of low quality and they would not last. Rather, to spend the money wisely and for something that will last over time. My years of working in the state and county has told me that we are looking at doing social services on the cheap. Now we pay people to refer children's services to services when the services doesn't actually exist or they are inaccessible. We look to get the bang for our buck, and I can tell you that this philosophy is costing us money. This is not about money, policy, or developmental position statements from agencies. This is about children. This is about their lives and their future. There's something to be said for doing it right the first time. It saves you time, it saves money, and it saves human misery. I urge you to do it right this time. Do not pass this bill. Support the School for the Blind as an independent institution. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. and Mrs. Cleaver.
My name is Neil Cleaver, and my wife is here to support me. I want to say, Chairperson Gelser and distinguished legislators, I came to the School for the Blind in 1966 as principal, and in 1985 became director of the school and was there about 30 years. I would like to look at the, because of that, I would like to look at the administration part a little bit. Actually, I think I have the most historical memory concerning the School for the Blind of anybody living. So I go way back to Mark Hatfield, and yeah, I need to look at my notes. But so the School of the Blind at that time was under the Board of Control. They got too busy as Oregon was growing, and then it became under the Special Schools Division, which lasted one biennium, and then the school was put under the Department of Education. And the school, if you look in the early history of the school, it was in the Department of Education at one time then. I have concerns about that. Now, when we were under the Board of Control, we had one person in the office. We had 130 students, and we had one person in the office who handled the budget and handled personnel. And I believe there's a few more now. But then when we went to the Department of Education, it was quite a shock for us. I know when I was director, I answered to the specialist for special schools. She answered to the education, special education person, who answered to the assistant superintendent, you know, who answered to the superintendent. And so that was quite a shock for us when we came from here. And about every other biennium since then, the move to the School for the Blind or another location or to close it has come up. And for some reason, people are hell-bent on selling the property, property donated by the Bush family for special education. And also because this continues to come up, whenever we needed building repairs, we would always hear, "You may not be here, we'll just be doing a little patching to get you through." And now the poor shape of the buildings has become an issue in closing it. I guess
we have to ask you to start summarizing, please.
I don't believe that ODE and OSB have been a good match. I think ODE chipped away many of the fun, creative, exceptional programs that have excited parents and children. And in my 3 minutes, I'm not going to be able to say what they are, but I have it written down. I believe that ODE has spent enough money on studies, task forces, architects, models of new schools, consultants, appraisers, attorneys, money which could have kept the buildings in good shape, could have made it earthquake resistant, kept strong programs going, and OSB accredited. Oregon's legislature has been our savior for the last 135 years. In 2007, the legislature created an Oregon School for the Blind Board of Directors. And the last time I read the law, it said Board of Directors. And I've been hearing Board of Advisory Board. And I know we talked a long time about that in working on it with legislators there, and we determined that it would be a Board of Directors. I am on my second term as a commissioner for the blind. For the Commission for the Blind, and it has thrived.
Mr. Cleaver, I have to ask you to summarize, please.
Okay. Although the last time I was here, I was the last speaker and only got 1 minute. and my wife is giving me a minute. But I will summarize. The 2007 legislature created that Oregon School for the Blind Board of Directors, and I was here for the vote, and there was only one vote against it, as I remember. The Oregon Commission, and I was telling about the Oregon Commission for the Blind, who is, I think, a great agency, and I would like a similar model for the School for the Blind. It would give blind citizens a voice in building a strong, vibrant, state-of-the-art program for Oregon's children who are blind and visually impaired. And I think we have a good board. Five of them are blind. and two of them are sighted, and the Commission for the Blind has five blind persons on it, two-sided. It's run by a blind young attorney that's brilliant, and it's working very well.
Thank you, Mr. Cleaver.
Thank you.
Our next is Jay Gentz.
We're on the next page now.
No, there's two more panels after this.
Am I alone up here?
Yes. Yes. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
All right.
Oh, these seats are way softer than those hard chairs.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
Chair Gelser, committee members, my name is Jay Gentz. I appreciate that we can come together to share what may be opposing views, all of which are based on a passionate concern for our kids who are blind and visually impaired in this state. As Kay Sepp said earlier today, we really can be friends at the end of the day, even though we don't always agree with what we believe in this bill. Bless you. I want to clarify for the purposes of this hearing that I'm sharing my perspective as a private citizen. I'm an educator and advocate for kids who are blind and visually impaired. I'm a teacher of visually impaired. I'm a certified O&M specialist. Some of you know that I'm also the director of Columbia Regional Program right now. It is one of the eight regional programs serving kids who are blind and visually impaired. I've taught in residential schools for the blind, in school districts, in regional programs. I've worked at a state level. For the past 10 years, I've been an administrator in such programs. I do support the concepts associated with 2834 because these concepts help to ensure that services are provided in the local community, supporting students to live at home and attend his or her school. I understand the very complex and strong emotions associated with any discussion of closing the School for the Blind, but I truly believe that we're at a crossroads in identifying our future service delivery needs for Oregon's students. We have a unique opportunity to determine our direction for future generations, and we should not let our thinking about this future path be directed by a fear of change. We have an opportunity to redesign Oregon's service model and align it with our 21st century needs. We have an opportunity to use existing resources to package a set of statewide services that ensures that all kids are provided the needed services and supports while living at home and attending their local school. I believe that every child and every family has the right to expect that. I appreciate that there are significant protections for students enrolled at the school and their successful transition back to a school district. I particularly appreciate the infrastructure established of the trust fund to ensure that the revenue would be earmarked for all kids with vision impairment in our state. I think that redirection of existing resources is both cost-effective and ethically responsible. We really can learn from what many states have already done and implemented. Like other states, I believe that we do need a subset of statewide services that augment local services. These services should target those highly specialized skills that many people who have testified today have talked about being important, and I agree with that totally. I hear four critical areas, and I agree with this, to be continued as a statewide infrastructure: transition supports for our older kids, opportunities to socialize and network with other kids who are blind and visually impaired, technology services, and some of the specialized expanded core curriculum areas of daily living skills instruction and such. It's time that we move forward in redesigning our statewide services, using existing resources to enhance our statewide services to support all students to live and attend school at home. We have the infrastructure to do this, but we cannot be afraid of change. Carefully constructed, thoughtful, data-informed change can and will serve as the impetus for a far greater good for all Oregon's children. I believe that the primary concepts of this bill represent such positive change. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next panel is Ms. Osteen and Donna Bauermiller and Linda Mock. I heard Linda Mock. I double dipped. I'm sorry. And we also heard Norm Jordan. Great. So also Chris Edwards, please. It is a different Chris Edwards. There is only one John Hinman, but there are two Chris Edwards.
Okay. Oh, Representative Edwards.
Yes. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Sharina Osteen, and I am a employed education teacher. I teach a special education class, Life Skills, that serves a wide range of students with severe disabilities, MRDD. In my district alone, they said 900 blind students, visually impaired or blind, blind is blind. 900 in the state. And with moving services totally to the districts, I'm wondering, how can you provide the same daily instruction in my classroom and in the classrooms of all my peers in my district, high school? I'm just going to talk high school for a second. My students receive reading. I'm sure they receive it in all grades. They receive reading instruction, sight word instruction, math instruction, writing instruction, comprehension instruction, fluency reading instruction every day. How are you going to provide that to blind students? For 900 blind students across the state in their districts to meet the same quality every other student in the state is getting. I don't see it happening. My district last, about 3 years ago, decided to pull their severely disabled students out of the ESD programs to bring the money back in to the district rather than having to share it with the ESD, because they needed those funds. My class was impacted. I received students who are deaf, blind, and with CP or autism, or, well, that comes with severe mental retardation. So everyone's fighting for money. I'm speaking for the children. I became blind at age 28, went and learned Braille, went to college. Ah, you're not allowed to use Braille. It took me 15 years to complete a program to get credentials, struggling with waiting for audio tapes, with going and making in large print myself. I'm just asking you to be reasonable, to think about the quality of education that you're taking away when these kids aren't getting quality in their districts at all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for hearing me today. I'm Donna Bauer-Miller, and I speak for myself and my husband. Before I read my written statement, we look at OSB having only 31 students, and I think we need to look somehow, and I don't know the politics or the structure, we need to look at what appears to be a disconnect between the regional programs and the school districts and OSB. We were lucky enough to really hear about what OSB could offer us when Molly was a senior in high school. Had regional services that I'm not complaining about from the time she was two. But OSB was a secret for some reason that wasn't pitched to us until that late in Molly's life. On a personal level, let me say that Molly's life and ours were the parents, did I say that, of a 23-year-old legally blind daughter who attended OSB summer programs and completed a 3-year transition program in 2007. On a personal level, let me say that Molly's life and ours have been absolutely changed by the transition program and the high level of skills and commitment of the staff. In this well-planned and staffed residential setting, Molly was safely able to master living skills that the school system and we were unable to help her achieve. Her public school experience was good, and we received services through the Columbia Regional Program from the time she was two, but her isolation as a vision-impaired student cannot be overstressed. Arriving at OSB, living with other vision-impaired classmates, and presented with this wide range of challenges and supports simply transformed her. It is a safe but challenging setting that for the first time allowed her to function much, much more independently. Now at home, while we wait for appropriate housing options, she practices these skills she learned, such as her banking, cooking, shopping, and personal care and safety. She made real friends there and still returns for special occasions. She would not be the same person without these 3 years of daily experience and daily practice. doing the things she needed to learn. And at OSB, she was just one of the kids, not a special needs kid. As you know, more of our vision-impaired individuals have multiple disabilities than do hearing-impaired ones. We knew Molly's whole person was being served at OSB. She is high-functioning on the autism spectrum, and her potential as a citizen has been realized to a higher degree, having spent time in the residential program than ever could have been just attending some skill classes here in the community. We are so saddened by the possibility other students will not have this experience and opportunity. And I will close. Your proposal to close OSB and provide services in the community, while well-meaning, simply ignores the state's history of being unable to provide community-based services for special needs populations. The closing of the state hospital system and dispersal of the chronically mentally ill into the community is just one example. We would hope that we could support OSB in efforts to reach out and recruit more students and broaden their program. And I thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Edwards.
Madam Chairman, the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Chris Edwards. My wife, Allie, Alicia, is a teacher at the Oregon School for the Blind. Unfortunately, she this kind of wiped her out preparing for it. I'm speaking on my behalf, but please permit me the opportunity later to get a more legible version of her written testimony. Printer error, sorry. House Bill 2834 was introduced to create a task force to study and report on costs associated with OSB and the benefits and challenges faced by Oregon School for the Blind, and declares a state of emergency. Before it could even really get reviewed by the legislature, Before it had a chance to really be reviewed by the legislature, it was amended. Funny word. It was titled HB 2834-2, which deletes the entire contents of the original bill and replaces it with an enormous revision, the main thrust of which is reinventing Oregon's entire education system as it pertains to the blind and visually impaired, abolishing OSB and selling its campus, deleting all legislative reference to OSB, and establishing a vision screening program. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. This measure would repeal Oregon Rules 2007, Chapter 858, Section 53, but has neglected to even notice or deal with its own housekeeping and repeal the following Section 52, 54, 55, 56, pertaining to master planning and et cetera for the board. A similar lack of thoroughness is reflected in other areas of this bill. Numerous other statutes are to be amended with no apparent purpose but to erase OSB and the rights of its personnel from the law books. Why it stops there does not also commandeer the functions of the Oregon School for the Deaf is unclear, as they are all that remain in the edited section. Among its many far-reaching clauses is a mandatory but unenforceable vision screening program. Nearly identical programs are in front of this legislative session as both HB 2060 and HB 2064. All three of these bills neglect to observe the existing accommodations for vision screening and eye examinations mandated by ORS 346.170 under the Oregon Commission for the Blind. Each were hastily drafted without coordination, perhaps to secure Oregon's share of a $65 million from recently passed H.R. 577 Vision Care for Kids Act, which provides children with follow-up care once they have been identified with a potential vision care problem through a comprehensive vision exam or vision screening. In conclusion, can you really endorse such a poorly constructed piece of legislation which will abolish and liquidate an eternal endowment created before your grandparents were born? A generous donation of land by so many individuals carefully worded to last forever. Legislation that will fragment services which are currently pooled in one place in Oregon where the most skilled professionals and appropriate resources possible are available. There is no argument that these skilled individuals, resources, and facilities have been woefully mismanaged over recent years, but it is this neglect which should be the focus and concern of our legislature. Last word, there is a state of emergency in Oregon's blind and visually impaired community. Thank you, Sarah Gelser, for helping us get this issue noticed. Now let us work on making the most of what we have been gifted. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Sorry.
Yes, Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Chair. I did want to mention that Chris Edwards' wife is also Allie.
I'm sorry?
Chris Edwards, the representative.
Yes. Oh, his wife is Allie also? Amazing.
Just thought that was rather a coincidence.
That's amazing. And next we have Jerry. I can't read my own handwriting. Day. Great, yes. And John Wojcia, please. And is there anyone else that signed up that I missed on this list? I see one hand over there, so come on up.
Was she exactly right? She was exactly right.
And that is the...
No kidding.
All right, I will add that.
I have a guide that
sometimes... There was a list we had not yet received.
This is Ki-I. He is a dog from Connecticut, actually. And this is past his bedtime, so he's kind of going, come on, Dad, it's time to go home and go to sleep. I'm Jerry Delaney. I live in southeast Portland, Oregon. And I head up a nonprofit called Omni Media Networks, Incorporated, a 501c3, as well as we are also running the Golden Hours Radio Network, which is also streaming this meeting to tonight. So we have linked over to you and have been streaming the work sessions and the meetings. The Omni Media Networks was formed in the year 2000 to basically try to bring together some of the state agencies and local agencies that are working with the blind. And we established an informal partnership with the School for the Blind, the Commission for the Blind at that time. And we applied for a Community Foundation grant and also an ACB of Oregon grant and got the initial equipment to put the internet radio station on the air that's at OSFB. I was drug into this project kicking and screaming because I was at that time working for Oregon Public Broadcasting, extremely busy. I'm legally blind. The idea of having to travel back and forth to Salem, Oregon from Portland was probably one of the least popular things in my mind to do at that time. But however, I met some of the students at the School for the Blind and a very energetic transition counselor, and he talked me into sitting down and seeing what we could do. After several meetings, we applied for the Community Foundation grant. We got it. Don Wiemet was just appointed at the time when we were getting ready to set up the station. I called him up and I said, hey, we can set up an internet radio station. And his answer was, when? And I went, huh? Because I wasn't ready for that answer at all. But we set up the station. We started to introduce it gradually into the School for the Blind. And I'm just an old dinosaur that hasn't fallen over in the tar pits yet. But this has been an outstanding project. And there are so many stories. And I've heard some... It's amazing how many people I know that are in this room. I never realized I knew so many folks that were students at the School for the Blind. Like Sly, one thing he didn't tell you is he's a killer keyboard artist. He can play the keyboard like you wouldn't believe. And Dalton worked in the SWEP program at the Commission for the Blind. I was his so-called counselor, and he and I spent the summer working on servers and tearing apart servers so we could keep all these streams on the air and running. The stories go on and on. You've heard a lot of stories about these kids and how special they are. I was mainstreamed. My wife, who's totally blind, was mainstreamed. I know the regional program. I know how it works. I know where the problems are. I know about warehousing. And I've watched the School for the Blind. I've been a part of its program for the last 8 years. And
sir, can I have you summarize, please?
Sure.
Thanks.
And I am kind of the ghost that roams through late at night and fixes the equipment and keeps everything going. I hope that you'll think long and hard before closing the School for the Blind. It does some amazing one-to-one work that I don't think the regional programs can really do. Thank you much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Gelser and members of the committee here tonight. My name is John Voida. I live here in Salem. And I'm here today not necessarily on behalf of any particular organization. but it's been in my professional capacity as a manager of a bank here in downtown Salem that sees the students on a pretty regular basis that I've become to realize the value that the the school brings to the students and the community. So I'm here tonight to let the committee know that I'm here to oppose the legislation being proposed in the Bill 2834 for some of the following reasons. First of all, I feel that the time being allotted, the 3-month time frame to cease the operations and create these transition plans for every student is not sufficient. There's just too many people that have to be involved for each student's plan. It just seems logistically impossible. I'm also concerned with the way the transition plans are being proposed to be created on this case-by-case basis. It just seems that it has the potential to lead to a really inconsistent plan for each student. It also lacks sufficient measurable benchmarks for the students after their integration to the schools. It also doesn't address ongoing funding after this initial period, in my opinion, and where this funding will come from in the general fund and how it will be distributed to the schools. And lastly, the proposal places that task of training the staff, acquiring the resources, and developing the plans on the individual schools. And I think we all can agree that the schools already have a lot of things on their plates as it is. And I think that also leads to the potential for inconsistent delivery of this of their education services to the students. So that's all I have, and I just want to thank again the committee and the Representative Gelser for this opportunity.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
My name is Ernie Bergen. I'm the father of Rebecca. Rebecca spoke earlier, and that was all Becca, by the way. No prompting. We live in Beaverton. I had the opportunity and the pleasure to meet a number of the committee in the last week. For those that I didn't get a chance to chat with, my apologies that I didn't meet you individually, but thanks for this couple of minutes. A couple of observations for me. I've been fascinated, aggravated, mesmerized this evening. I think I'd like to summarize a couple of things. Number one, the notion that distribution of services back out to the home districts is something new or untested, bunk. We've lived that life since February 1st of 1994 when our daughter was hit by a car at the age of 5. 17-year-old girl came around the corner and hit her. It happens. And we've lived that dream. And for the record, I want to make sure that folks understand that's in finger quotes. It's not a dream. Trying to see this model of distributed services at the home district with the best of intentions in a relatively affluent district, Beaverton School District in our case, it doesn't work. Not for all students. I think that with a number that are being quoted of 900 and some students statewide, I think that the number that's so low in the Oregon State School for the Blind is a real indicator of the number of needs that are probably not being met within the state. Just as in February 1st of 94 when Becca suddenly felt in desperate need of specialized services, and thank goodness we had Emmanuel Hospital, type 1 trauma, et cetera, to keep her alive, the School for the Blind is another one of those services. We've talked a lot about Salem Hospital, for example, being interested in the property. Forget that. Just put in your mind for a second the notion of distributing hospital services to the home. You know, I'll give you a little betadine. You got sharp knives. You've got bandages. We'll distribute that to you, and you'll take care of at least outpatient service. And by the way, if it's something serious, then we probably just won't be cared for. That's kind of how the way that the it seems like a really poorly thought out idea for the distribution of services at this point. So, with respect to ARC of Oregon, who we've benefited from, Columbia Region Services, we've benefited from them as well. I understand this looks like a tremendous infusion of capital, a short term gain, but it's. I would like to support those others that said cautionary. There's a role for both. And I really believe that to be true. For 20 years, and it's in your own legislation, the discussions that we've gotten through a number of you on the committee, this has been a topic. And now we seem to be a surprise at the self-fulfilling prophecy of not maintaining these services, not maintaining the infrastructure. I'm an engineer by training. It's just like not changing the oil in your car. At some point it starts to smoke. And how did that happen? I would suggest that we have an alternative as a state to, instead of killing the horse, maybe put a little liniment on its legs and find out that it has a lot more life left in it. And that horse provides a service that cannot be distributed. Carving the horse up into 100,000 parts isn't the horse. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And then last we have Lynn Shore and Renee. Are Lynn Shore or Renee? And we've checked up. Is there anyone left, Herb, upstairs in hearing room D?
There's someone up there, but no one that wants to speak.
Nobody up there that wants to speak?
Madam Chair?
Yes?
I would like to speak.
All right. We did this last time. So we'll end the same way. Come on up, and you can have your 3 minutes. And then this will be the last person. Thank you and welcome back.
I do apologize. I arrived late and missed the sign-up opportunity. My name is John Case and I work at OSD. I think I would like to summarize four specific points. I was at lunch, having lunch with a friend. And they had some OSB experience and we were talking, you know, it's a resource problem was the discussion, and you know, you see resources and resources are getting pulled from them regularly. It's a similar thing. We sit down, we're going to have a salad together. I pull into their salad. I grab a fork. Well, in a sense, you're expecting them still to eat the salad. I might have the fork, I might have a spoon, I might have a knife there. But once I've taken that fork, they're left trying to decide what's appropriate. Well, maybe I'll use a spoon. Well, you're not going to be able to get the job done with a spoon. And I think that's what you're asking of OSB. You're giving them that salad and you're taking the utensils away from them. All right, putting that aside, shopping at Costco, I'm sure we've all done it, right? I can't be the only Costco shopper in the room. I'm not seeing hands, but no, oh, maybe we've got some Walmart supporters here. I don't know what we've got on hand. Okay. When you go and you're out to purchase maybe a new wheelchair, when you go out to purchase new tires, and you're out purchasing those and you're comparing things, and maybe you're looking at the level in the tires and medicine that you would like to have a refill. And you're thinking about, okay, the tires, I've got the refill, now I'd like the food. I think I'd like to go, well, where are you choosing? You might think maybe the store, I'm going to go to a tire store, then I'm going to drive across town, I'm going to buy my medicine and get it refilled, and then I'm going to run on over to a grocery store and get the food. OSB is a Costco-like opportunity for you. It's all there. It's the one stop for all the shopping needs. OSB, and I would say the same for OSD, in a lot of ways has put Oregon on the map. You look at U of O and OSU, and the championships that they've won, you're not going to see that from an OSB school, that recognition. Late into the evening, we're still here, and we have three people who are supporting your house bill of closing the school. Three. Well, can we look at the majority? The majority of the kids.
And it's time to summarize.
Uh-oh, that means I've got a second left, don't I? All right. Regional center, I believe that's a viable option. Behind this, you're talking about a regional center. Along with the closure, you have to consider that there's got to be a centralized service opportunity. It's the financing behind the program. Last year, people talked about, oh, sorry, the money. There's no money there. It's not possible. And when people said there wasn't enough money in a school district to provide services, where did they send deaf students? They sent them to OSD. Because the financing was there and the support programs were there. I think it's the same for OSB when money's tight. And I think that's all I'd like to share. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. And thank you to the committee for sitting through the testimony this evening. I think we've heard a lot. Thank you to the families and the staff. Thank you to the ASL interpreters for your dedication here this evening. A couple of quick announcements. There is, some of you have raised some issues in the Dash 2 amendments. There is a Dash 3 amendment which addresses many of those concerns. It was emailed out this evening. I haven't seen them yet, but they were emailed out before I got a chance to see them because I wanted you all to have them right away. They are in a Word document, so they can go into a an audio reader. And committee, we will be having a work session on this bill with the Dash 3 amendments at 1 o'clock this coming Friday, and which is the 10th, and I will see you all tomorrow at 1 o'clock. And the House Committee on Education is adjourned. Thank you.
Just keep moving.